Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome along this Thursday afternoon, late Thursday afternoon, maybe it's early Thursday afternoon, mid-Thursday afternoon, wherever you are. Whatever it is, I hope it's a good one. Thanks for joining in this afternoon, this evening. Welcome to what I hope will be 3 hours of scintillating conversation. Thank you for your indulgence last night, as it was necessary for me to knock off 30 minutes early. The Netroots Nation conference call for the Democracy for America scholars, yeah, I'm a scholar, was quite good, and there's a heck of a lineup coming at you from Pittsburgh. I invited all of my fellow scholars there on the conference call last night to, by all means, drop by the horn table and let their readers know that they can be heard, and that the whole event can be heard, various and sundry panels, via the streaming solutions of the Horn. This is a little peek into what can be a very exciting future. Turns out C-SPAN will be there, and covering several of the events. I still haven't had an update on whether Bill O'Reilly's stalking producer is going to be there, but I will have a plate of falafel and a sign, free falafel for Bill O'Reilly employees. I mean, you can't let an opportunity like that pass you by. Right? Sure. There's going to be approaching 2,000 or more people at this event. That's pretty good. And that's a lot of good liberal ideas and a lot of passionate, progressive liberal dedication. I imagine there's going to be some noise made about things like healthcare while we're there. I know we'll be making some noise about mountaintop removal. This should be exciting across the board. And I think it's cool beyond comprehension that y'all are going to be there. We will, of course, invite folks to the chat room where you can discuss among yourselves and maybe get some questions in, depending on the panel that you're listening to at the time. The potential for this simply astonishes me. And that all begins next Thursday. I have to leave here Tuesday. I'll try to do a show Tuesday night. Quite possibly Guy James and I will do a show together Wednesday night. Wouldn't that be neat? And then on Thursday, the balloon goes up. The whistle blows, the eagle flies, whatever you like. And the coverage begins. It is, of course, a historic day in this country. Sonia Sotomayor has been confirmed in a 68-31 vote in the United States Senate. 9 Republicans did cross the line to vote for her. The lone senator not present for the vote was Ted Kennedy, unable to attend. Now, Justice Sotomayor will be sworn in on Saturday, by that weirdo right-wing freak John Roberts. They are in Rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. Thirty-one weird, twisted, un-American, right-wing, old Confederate freaks. Susan Collins and Olympia Snow of Maine, New Hampshire's Judd Gregg, Indiana's Richard Lugar, Missouri's Kit Bond, Florida's Mel Martinez, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and Lamar Alexander of Tennessee all voted in her favor. But not Senator Inhofe. Oh, hell no. Not Senator Jefferson Moore and Rod Sessions the Tud. Nope, he wasn't getting it. Nah, she's just a little too female, a little too, not white. Senator Voinovich of Ohio is correct. The Repig-Licking Party is little more at this point than a manifestation of the old Confederacy. And I hope it continues to narrow until it finally dies. Of course, then we'll have enough of a battle on our hands dealing with so-called blue dog Democrats. Congratulations to Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And let me say from the outset that I know that she's going to render decisions that I'm going to sit here and think are absolutely crazy. Because, remember, if you're in the judiciary, I don't care if they call you a liberal or an activist, you are involved in the single most conservative undertaking in this country. Because remember, the law, what does it do? Three M's, remember? It manages the morons. It punishes the mean ones. And above all, it protects the money. So just bear that in mind. But congratulations. Congratulations are in order and more than due for Sonia Sotomayor. I mentioned that Senator Ted Kennedy was unable to attend the vote. He is, of course, still dealing with his illness. And if you ever wondered, as we always do, if you ever wondered just how it is that, how low a Repig-Licking can go, if you ever wondered that, of course, there are always Repig-Lickings willing to show you how low they can go, and when you think they've gone as low as they can go, they'll dig a little deeper, and they'll get a little further into the filth. I offer as tonight's Exhibit 1 of that proposition, Senator Chuck Grassley. Charles Grassley. Nasally, weaselly little man from Iowa. He is the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee. He is the man who is doing everything in his power to make sure that you and I don't have meaningful access to publicly funded health care. Yesterday, he did a radio interview with Iowa City radio station KCJJ. It's the big JJ. Yeah. And when a caller, well, I'll let you hear it for yourself. But there's low, and there's sleazy, and there's filthy. And, you know, we started prayer meeting last night with some low, sleazy, and filthy. But that was low, sleazy, and filthy from Flush Flembaugh and G. Gordon Liddy, whom, if they weren't low, sleazy, and filthy, you would think that the world had somehow shifted on its axis and was now precariously teetering and tottering and wobbling through space. Not that this planet doesn't teeter, totter, and wobble through space, only more so. But this is a senator. This is Senator Charles Grassley. This is a man who is supposed to be cloaked in the gravitas of the Senate. That more mature, more deliberative body of our legislative branch. Don't kid yourself. Repiglickens is Repiglickens is Repiglickens is Repiglickens, and I got the proof.
We got to change things. And change things in a way so that the government doesn't run our health care. Because, you know, in countries that have government-run health care, just give you an example. I've been told that the brain tumor that Senator Kennedy has, because he's 77 years old, would not be treated the way it's treated in the United States. In other words, he would not get the care that he gets here because of his age. In other words, they say, well, he doesn't have long to live, even if he'd live another 4 or 5 years. They'd say, well, we got to spend the money on people that have more, can contribute more to the economy. You know, it's a little bit like people saying, in a sense, you know, when somebody gets to be 85, their life is worth less than when you're 35, and you pull the tubes on them. That's what happens in some areas of the world where the government's running things. Now, I don't want to say that every government-run program in other countries is bad, because I think when it comes to the primary care and the little things that people need to get done to get well in a short period of time, you know, that care may be, that level of care may be adequate. But when you run into more complicated things, and particularly with older people, you find a great deal of rationing in a lot of other countries. Now, people say, well, what about the people that don't have health care here? Well, I said that some of our goals is to make sure that everybody has health insurance, and those that are low income are going to need some help. And people that are discriminated against because of pre-existing conditions, we're going to do away with pre-existing conditions. And then
there's a Freudian moment. Sorry, I just had to interrupt. We're going to do away with those pre-existing conditions and the people who have them.
Those people, even if they could get insurance, can't afford it. So with community rating or modified community rating, we're going to be able to help people that would otherwise have high premiums to have more average premiums so that they could get health insurance that now would be denied.
Well, you know, it's like...
Yeah, sure. So let's see. Somebody who is getting something on the order of $3 a day on food stamps, they're going to take that money that they're not spending on all that extra food, and they're going to buy themselves from some foravarice health care mandated by the Repiglickan Party, because we don't have a real majority that'll stand up to the dirty bastards. Whew. Did you hear that? Trying to make the argument for against a public option and against publicly financed health care for America, trying to advance that argument on the back of Senator Kennedy? You god-awful, sleazy, dirty, foul, vile, filthy, rotten, low-down, snake's belly in a wagon rut, shit-eating, egg-sucking dog Charles Grassley, you! Damn! Where does he get off? What sort of nasty, toxic thing is living in him where the rest of us have a soul or something capable of human compassion? Pig-eyed little puke, lick spittle. No shame. No shame.
We got to change things. And change things in a way so that the government doesn't run our health care, because...
You dumbass! Government is doing a magnificent job running Medicare. And until the Bush administration tried to break it into a million pieces, a halfway decent job dealing with the most dangerous and difficult health care system in the world, the VA. I'm going to make sure government doesn't run health care. Yeah, because your insurance industry pals, who are, for whom you wear knee pads and do for them what Monica did for Bill. Yeah, they're doing a great job, Chuck. You dog vomit. This is the guy that we're negotiating with? Honest to God, I am a nonviolent man. But talk like that makes me long for the day when a man with some dignity and honor could walk up to a piece of filth like Charles Grassley and make the spit fly out of his mouth with a white glove and say, I'll see you on the flat spot in the morning. Pistols at 20 paces, you blackguard. What a miserable piece of human excrescence he is. Garbage. Human filth. To try to ride a man's brain tumor, and not just any man, but a man who has tried to do more for the poor and suffering in this country through the offices of government than virtually any other living member of our political class, Ted Kennedy. And to try to ride his condition into some sort of advocacy for more of the same, more profiteering on the backs of the sick and the ailing and the dying. God damn him. The United States has the 10th highest death rate among cancer patients among developed countries. And here's this old sorry freak who is little more than a prostitute and a dishonest one at that. Charles Grassley in the Senate, Charles Grassley is, as to American politics, as a prostitute with the clap is to the public health. He has poison, and he is trying to spread it.
You know, in countries that have government-run health care, just give you an example. I've been told that...
Who told you, Chuck? I've been told. Who told you? Sources, please.
The brain tumor mold.
Virus database has been updated.
It's treated.
Who told you? What K Street right-wing healthcare paid-off lobby firm told you that lie? Because it is a lie.
In the United States, in other words, he would not get the care that he gets here because of his age. In other
Grassley, you slimy son of perdition itself. There are people all over this country, millions perhaps, who have the same problem that Senator Kennedy has, and they aren't getting the care they need and deserve. And they're not getting it, Senator Grassley, because of you and because of the health care corporations and the four avarice-driven, profit-induced journey into pain, agony, misery, and death that the for-profit health insurance companies drive us down every day. Damn you, Charles Grassley. I can't think of anything awful enough to happen to Charles Grassley to make up for the awful, awful nature of his sick, twisted comments. More than half of U.S. patients don't get access to medical care. 38% of patients last year didn't receive recommended treatment, and that compares to 11% in Canada and 6% in the United Kingdom. Oh, but they were all old! Right, Chuck? Even among those Americans who have some form of health insurance, 43% of adults with chronic conditions had trouble getting access to adequate care because of the cost. Those are the realities. Those are the realities. But no mind. Senator Grassley has one thing to do and one thing only, and that is to continue to prostitute himself to the avarice-driven for-profit healthcare industry. And damn everything else. This country. Oh, and by the way, an update. Apparently you were among many who complained to NPR Mara Liasson, as we noted on the program last night, apologized today for comparing Cash for Clunkers and Katrina.
Cash for Clunkers is like a mini Katrina here. It's not good to start a government program and not be able to execute it.
And I mentioned that NPR ombudsman. The NPR ombudsman is Alicia Shepard. And apparently Alicia Shepard jumped on Mara Liasson like a dog on a bone wagon. Her response to Mara Liasson was, and I quote, "Say what? It is inconceivable anyone could compare that disaster to Cash for Clunkers, which simply gives people a voucher worth up to $4,500 to trade in an old car for a newer, more fuel-efficient vehicle." Mara Liasson responded, according to Alicia Shepard, and said, and this is Mara Liasson's quote,
"I said something really stupid, which I regret. I should have merely said any time the government does something less than competent, it makes it harder to get people to trust them with other programs. People died in Katrina because of government incompetence."
No, Mara, honey, you still don't get it. People died in Katrina because of governmental disdain. Not incompetence. Disdain. They didn't care. The people dying in the foul, fetid, stinking waters of Katrina's aftermath, the bodies floating face down, Mara, all that happened because the Bush administration didn't give a rat's rear end about the brown people who were suffering along the Gulf Coast. It wasn't incompetent, Mara. It was highly competent. It was sickeningly competent, the degree to which the Bush administration willfully, wantonly, allowed people that they simply don't deem to be quite as human as they are, die.
" I was thinking of an example of government incompetence, and I picked that one, one that was too big and egregious.
Yeah, see, that's why it was wrong for you to make the statement, sweetie, because it was big and egregious. No, it was brutal and inhuman, Mara.
I was over the top in my choice of a metaphor. It was a mistake.
No, again. If it's a mistake, it's like one of those little, what are they, Cartier eggs? It's a mistake within a mistake within a mistake within a mistake. Cartier? I don't think so. Somebody will correct me. Your initial mistake was following Juan Williams' trail of breadcrumbs over to Fox. No one working for NPR has any business on Fox because Fox will corrupt. Because Fox is corrupt. An anonymous NPR executive said, and I quote, "Now, if this had been said live on NPR's air, we would have redone the interview." Alicia Shepard went on to say, "Whether Liason likes it or not, making a gaffe on Fox reflects poorly on NPR, as many listeners have let me know." But you know what? I'll bet you a dollar to a donut that nobody's told her that she can't go back on Fox. Choose, Mara. Choose, honey. Go to Fox, get paid well, and spew right-wing talking points and bilious dribble. Or do something approaching real journalism and stay at NPR. You cannot serve two masters. Right? That would seem to be the case. And that is just the beginning. Absolutely. That is just the beginning. We'll take a quick break. And we will come right back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
I gotta keep moving, I gotta keep moving. Blues falling down like hail, blues falling down like hail. And the day keep worrying me, there's a hellhound on my trail, hellhound on my trail, hellhound on my trail. If today was Christmas Eve, if today was Christmas Eve, and tomorrow Christmas Day, if today was Christmas Eve, tomorrow Christmas Day, oh, wouldn't we have a time, babe? All I need, my little sweet rider, just to pass the time away, to pass the time away. You sprinkle hearts with butter all around my door, all around my door. You sprinkle hot food powder all around your daddy's door. Mm-hmm. It keep me with Ramblin' Ride Rider. Every old place I go, every old place that I go. can tell the wind is rising. Leaves trembling on the trees, trembling on the trees. I can tell the wind is rising. Leaves trembling on the trees, trembling on the trees. All I need, my little sweet woman, and to keep my company, oh, to keep my company. I gotta keep moving, I gotta keep moving. Blues falling down like hail, blues falling down like hail. And the day keep worrying me, the hellhound on my trail, hellhound on my trail, hellhound on my trail.
Kind of feels like that sometimes, doesn't it? Can't do chain. Can't do chain. Hellhound on my trail from an album of his by the name of She's Irresistible. Just look him up on the internet. It's some great stuff to have in your collection. It is about 28 minutes before the hour. You know how to reach the program, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your own nickel, of course, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Bob Kincaid at gmail.com. A couple of comments rolling in. Our buddy Marty says, we need to fold Justice Kennedy, not Ted, Kennedy into the R-A-T-S, rats, and carts. Just won't do it. He adds, don't hold back now, Bob. How do you really feel about Grassley? You see, I got this long history with of despising Charles Grassley. I've loathed that little piece of human since I first saw him prostituting himself as a young Ripig-Lickin, on behalf of Oliver North during the Iran-Contra hearings, and trying to keep hanging on, trying to desperately keep Ronnie Reagan in office. And I got some serious loathing going on for old Chuck Grassley, without a doubt. Let's see, what else? Our buddy David chimes in from South Carolina. Bob, want to get good and pissed off? Here from CNN's website. Check out this balanced coverage of healthcare debate. Gloria Borger, stop the shouting on healthcare. Gloria Borger is a senior political analyst for CNN, appearing regularly on CNN's The Situation Room, Campbell Brown, AC360, and State of the Union with John King, as well as special event coverage and Romper Room. Oh, sorry, the Romper Room part wasn't there. Gloria Borger writes, ah, the summer. Time for all those members of Congress to go home, meet with their constituents, get their input on health care reform, and take back what they've learned from the voters. Not exactly. And she goes to some lengths to describe what Arlen Specter went through, yada, yada, yada. But it's not just the folks at these town halls who have learned how to heckle. Their bad behavior is a derivative of the questionable quality of the political debate they listen to every day. Indeed, if there's one thing we've gotten really good at over the years, it's this, reducing complicated problems to bite-sized slogans. It seems to work, so we keep doing it. Ipso facto, Obama's reform does become socialism to his Republican critics.
And the administration is not above creating a handy bogeyman of its own. The insurance companies.
Oh, shut up.
How about that?
The Obama administration created the insurance companies. Did you get that? Didn't take any of the words out or nothing. The administration is not above creating a handy bogeyman of its own, the insurance companies.
At least according to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who accuses the insurance companies of full-force carpet bombing and shock and awe against the public option. Too bad they actually support the rest of reform and are still running positive ads about the effort. They who? The insurance companies? No. Sorry. I don't know what color the sky is on Gloria Borger's planet, but no, the insurance industry is not supporting the public option or single payer or anything like that. Good God, they fought us when an attempt was made to allow Medicare the same sort of volume pricing negotiations for pharmaceuticals. What happened with that? Oh, that's right. corporate America fought that tooth and toenail, too. We are dealing with some rotten, sleazy, piss-poor examples of human beings, without a doubt. And our buddy Reverbo also adding, and there it is, the reverse exceptionalism. Let's assume that there are, in fact, publicly funded healthcare plans around the world that operate with varying degrees of success. Could America come up with a new, improved one? Not according to the Repiglickens. Our plan would have to be the worst. After all, Americans don't have the brains to get anything right anymore, so let's just lie and scream the whole idea away. Yeah. Yeah. God, it's breathtaking. It is absolutely breathtaking. Let's go to the phones and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey!
You've been giving it to them. Good for you.
Well, trying.
I just got off the phone giving it to Obama.
Oh, yeah?
I am so angry. I was just going to email this to you. Obama gives powerful drug lobbyists seat at the health care table.
I wonder if there's a seat for you and me.
Probably not.
That would be no.
Exactly. Anyway, I just probably spent 15 minutes bitching at the woman.
Well, you know what? As long as we're reasonably polite about it, letting people know how we feel, there's no sin in that.
Well, that's the way I look at it. I told her I'm so frustrated because he brought in Geithner and Summers and it hasn't done anything. Nothing like we expected him to do.
No, and we're still waiting for, you know, why it is we keep getting this half a loaf approach.
Yeah. So I was I really unloaded on the woman. I told her I'll probably have to be out of my house in 3 months. And she's worried about that. I want these bankers off my back.
God, you're facing that?
Yeah. I spoke to you probably about a month ago.
Yeah.
When I called late. Really late.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. No, I'm going to let them have it. Because I went through them calling me almost daily a year ago. And I told the woman, I said, I'm headed to 60 years old. And these people don't want to give me a job, especially in Detroit.
No, not a lot of jobs in Detroit right now. You are surprisingly calm for facing what you're facing.
Well, I done my best at blocking it out. But I know that if I lost everything I have, that they'll probably have to kill me. Because this is my life.
Yeah. And, of course, your life can't get in the way of corporate profits, nor can any of our lives.
Exactly.
We must maintain our sense of priority now, mustn't we?
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think we should take away these morons' health care.
I would love to do that. I wish there was some mechanism in government whereby we could just say, okay, all to the Senate and the House, every last one of you, the president, the executive branch, the judicial, everybody, all your health care is canceled.
Well,
now, you'll get it back. You'll get it back.
I can't remember who it was. But one of the senators or congressmen has given up, and it's been several years since he did it. He refused to take the medical care until the public got it. And I can't remember who it is. I heard him on something a couple days ago, I think.
Yeah, I've heard something about that, and I can't remember who it is either. But the fact of the matter is, if he's a member of the government, he's getting paid enough that he can go out and buy his own health insurance.
Yeah, and that's what they ought to do.
Well, arguably.
Especially Grassley. Maybe they can give all of them a brain transplant.
Well, it would involve first you'd have to pull their heads out of their, well, never mind. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, they're despicable.
Well, keep at it, and please keep us posted. We will continue to think of you, and let us know how it's going, because you very calmly just said something that strikes fear into the hearts of people all over this country, and you said it as calmly as can be.
Well, I've been facing it for a year or two now, so plus I'm with an organization here that we fight them.
Well, I hope
we've actually saved it. We've saved more people, this organization I'm with, than any of the government things which that woman suggested. They've saved one or two people out of 1,000.
Yeah.
And we've saved 2 people without government backing.
Well, I can only wish you the very best as you go forward in that, and you know, we, like I said, we'll keep you in our thoughts and our hopes.
No, thank you.
So please do keep us posted, all right?
Yeah, well, I'm like I said, I'm not going to worry about it as long as they don't take everything I own, or I don't lose everything. I mean, all I have is, you know, stuff that has meaning to me.
Right.
You know, things made by my grandparents that raised me, or my mother who passed away when I was 10. And I'm afraid I would flip out.
And you would be entitled, but you know, hang on as hard as you can.
Oh, believe me, I do. But if it, like I said, if it wasn't for this organization keeping me busy, in fact, if anybody has use for mint oil.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the process of trying to help Crosby Mint Farm in St. John's, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Because the farming bank gave them a loan, and she accidentally got late with one payment. I forget what her mix-up was. And so now they're foreclosing on their almost 100-year-old farm this week.
Oh, mercy.
And the price of how much they got, they came and already took half of their equipment, their farming equipment, so they were trying to save their farm by selling drams
mm-hmm.
of min oil. And but things just aren't working out. They, like I said, they keep up and jacking up how much they got to pay them. And they're fully want to pay their debt to this bank. But they refuse to listen to them. In fact, I called them yesterday. And I intend to call them and fax them every day.
Keep doing
it. Give them hell.
Absolutely. So you're selling mint oil?
Yeah, if people are interested in it, they're trying to sell mint oil. They have all kinds of stuff on their website. Hold on, let me tell you what the website
yes,
is.
Yes, please.
If anybody can, you know, buy mint oil, they use it for a lot of healthy stuff, and they got wonderful candy. I was up there. I'll be probably going up there next week, I think Thursday, because we might try to intervene when they decide they want to throw them out. We might stop them, which we've done several times here in Detroit.
That's a level of courage a lot of folks don't have.
Well, there's a bunch of us.
Yeah. And there is strength in numbers. So do you have that website?
Yeah, hold on a second. It is www.getmint.com.
Getmint.com. G-E-T-M-I-N-T?
Yes.
Getmint.com. Okay, well, wonderful. Well, it is good talking to you, and it's good to hear from you. And please let us know. Don't be a stranger, and keep us apprised.
Like I said, I'm so busy helping myself and everybody else that I don't get a chance too often. But I heard you giving Grassley. That was a good thing.
I think he earned that. It probably marks me as a bit of a barbarian. But for heaven's sakes, if that's not earning it, what is?
They are. They're unbelievable that they don't care. You know, I mean, they're just plain heartless and soulless. Just like you said, you were right on everything you said. They're inhuman.
Subhuman.
I mean, I put it this way, and I should have mentioned this too. Since January of this year, five people have died, and four of those five were a family. The father and three children. The oldest child was 17, the youngest was 6.
Yes.
They were just buried a week ago. Because they refused to put a moratorium on not only on foreclosures, but also on shutoffs. And this poor father, he worked for a company related to the auto industry, and he lost his job, and he owed DT&E up here money for his utilities. Well, he went bankrupt, and they're not supposed to shut off your utilities after you go bankrupt, but they did anyway. And his wife and the 6-year-old had to have breathing machines. So he called them twice after they shut it off and told them that he had to have it put back on. And they said, oh, well, we'll get it tomorrow. So he had to go out to his church, borrow a generator. Brought it to his house, and because the neighborhood is bad, and I mean, they're stealing windows out of empty houses and siding off of them and everything up here, because he was probably afraid to leave it outside for fear he'd owe the church for the generator.
Yes, I read this story, and they were asphyxiated.
Yeah. Well, then, we held a demonstration, the Moratorium Now Coalition, which is the organization I'm with, held a demonstration out in front of DT&E. And a few days later, some of our people went into a meeting with the CEO and whatnot at DT&E. And they blamed the victim.
Oh, God.
It was their fault. And on top of it, one of the guys that was in that meeting with them, after he left, he went home and he turned on his radio and no electric. They shut his electric off. And he didn't owe them any money, and they never gave him a shut-off notice.
Thank God for anarcho-Randian capitalism.
So, anyway, so we're, like I said, we've been for 4 or 5 years trying to get our governor to declare a state of emergency here in Michigan. And she refuses to do anything. So we've been outside in the freezing cold, you name it, and haven't gotten anybody to do anything. But we actually have saved a few people. We got a Bank of America up here that a woman, I believe, was 74 years old, went and had two daughters, was widowed, lived in this house for 40, 50 years, and they talked her into getting a loan. She took out the loan, and then between her daughter and her illness, her daughter had congestive heart failure. And anyway, so because they weren't able to pay back the loan to Bank of America, we have Trot and Trot is the lawyers for Bank of America here in this area. And they, anyway, so she decided that since she couldn't pay it back, she would just get a reverse mortgage. Well, she filled out all the paperwork before, you know, she had to have it in. But Trot and Trot refused to accept it. And the daughter, the one daughter that wasn't ill, would go into court and fight them. And they told her right in her face that they wanted them out of there, that they, once they threw them out of their house, that they were going to sell the house for $1,000 or something.
Lord God.
And anyway, in the end, we fought them, and she ultimately did get her reverse mortgage and was able to stay in her house. But that was after, like, a two-hour fairly loud demonstration right outside Bank of America. A lot of our demonstrations, and including our, I don't know, did you hear about the Tent City and the People Summit in Tent City that was up here?
Yes, I did.
From the 14th to the 17th?
Yes.
Well, I took the videos, and it's, they're on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go out to YouTube and type in Sassy Last 924.
Okay.
And that'll bring up all of our the stuff that I was able to capture on video, including our two demonstrations at GM, where the cops were very prominent. But anywhere we go, we know that the police are going to be there. I mean, even at the Bank of America one, there was like, they sent like 4 or 5 cruisers that came from different directions, but we didn't do anything to get put in jail for. So.
No, it's just it's more it's
around them.
Yeah, it's more of a matter that you understand that you're to stay in your place. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't stop. You know, they were trying to get us to leave. And
well, remember, one of the three M's of the law is to protect the money.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you go look at those videos, you can see the cops. They were, like, almost elbow to elbow out in front of the Rensen the 2 days that we demonstrated there because they were protecting the money. That was all the big CEOs who were in there deciding our future. That's why we decided to have the People Summit. So, but anyway... So if you got a use for mint, help these people out because they were selling drams for $5 or $6 or $7.
Okay, so getmint.com. Well, thank you very much. It's good to hear from you.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Keep it up.
Absolutely.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. And we'll just, we'll keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, my God. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
God, that's just hideous, what she was talking about. It's just like, listening to that, I just think, oh, my God, you know, where are we living? Wow. I mean, I'm impressed that she keeps up the fight. It's just...
Yeah, I don't know if I'd have it in me.
Well, it's just sort of, I mean, what people are up against is just really incredible because, you know, the moratorium, all these sort of things, you know, that's all sounds like the right thing, but we're not dealing with the right things. The banks, unless they're forced by law or Congress, they would rather people go into foreclosure because they can make money all the way down with fees and stuff through the process, you see? They make more money doing that than to offer people a deal. Also, if you're lucky, they may not do anything because they want to keep that shit off the books, which is why the fake rise in housing is a joke, because of that inventory that we're not being told about, millions of homes on the books they don't want because it would bring, you know, it would cause an imbalance in their books. It's a mess for the people. The only thing that would help is cram down.
Yeah, and that's where right now?
Well, you know, they're starting to talk about it again because it's so blatant what's going on. You know how things get, when it gets ridiculously blatant in this country, you get a little bit more lip service?
Yeah.
Well, that's where we're at now. That's how bad it is. Because even Barney Frank, who I think he's just a load. He's bought and paid for, but he's even... lip syncing a little, if you don't do this to the banks, we're going to bring up cram down. Ain't that a shame? That's what they use to threaten their master. You know. But it should be the other way around, you know.
And that's the thing. You just hit it out of the park. They're masters. Because the threats are idle.
It's a joke. It's
the threats are meaningless.
No, it just smacks of it when you hear them. If you have any awareness at all, it's an insult, you know? It's like, oh, come on, Frank. You're not going to do shit, you know?
it hurts me, Sandra, to come to the conclusion that, no, they're not.
Well, I don't know, and I don't, you know, I feel, like I said, you know, I'm glad to hear people still, but they're struggling for their lives, you know, what am I saying? This isn't just... You know what I mean? It's like you don't really have a choice when you get to a certain point. You know, I understand. You got to try to keep your house. You got to try to keep whatever access to health care, whatever you can do. But this, we're all an island. That shit ain't going to work for us if we don't get together, you know?
Yeah.
Because we don't have a chance. There's no way. The powers that be are just too powerful. But
the entrenched. The word we're looking for here is entrenched.
Yeah, no, and it's really disturbing because it's starting to break out just blatant. You know what I mean? Although a lot of people still don't pay attention, I think that, you know, shit is getting so deep that you're kind of hard to avoid it because every other person you may know or some other horror story near you is unfolding. So you kind of have to wake up. But,
well, and we hear this story from Detroit's, and I'm amazed at, and I revere the heroism involved in getting out there and being noisy. But around the rest of the country, what we're hearing is more along the people who are getting noisy are the right-wing shills who have been brainwashed, hypnotized, mesmerized, I don't know, into going out and chasing senators while screaming the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, no, I can't even wrap my head around just how hideous that is, you know, utilizing that form of politicking the way it's being used by these corporations. I think it's just they're doing what they have to do to protect the $1 trillion profit center, you know?
Yeah, the goose that lays that keeps laying the platinum egg.
But for Obama to send out his minions to play down his direct quote is killing me. You know, his whole thing about I support and I want, you know, single payer that he blurted out, unfortunately for him, because now that's coming back to haunt him and he's trying to tamp it down. Why is he trying to tamp it down?
For the same reason you were just discussing, I suspect.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You know, the money has had a little conversation.
Well, this fool is having meetings with Tolson. Is that his name? That guy who's the head of the pharma lobby?
Yeah.
Group?
Yeah, Tolson.
Yeah, that freak. It's like, what? You know, apparently he's met up with him 5-6 times.
Oh, yeah,
it's depressing. Because did you get my article?
Yeah, I did, and I read it, and it is depressing. It's over at Common Dreams, by the way. What Sandra's talking about?
Yeah, is Norman Solomon? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much that it's his word; it just plays into, you know, other signs that are coming out. You know, why I keep going back to this. You know, well, how is this going to really shake out? And should we really be scared? Because I don't have any health care now, but I'll tell you what, I'd rather stay the way it is as opposed to them trying to drain me for more money.
Well, and you don't have the wherewithal to participate in a for-profit scheme. That's why you don't have it now. I mean, am I incorrect?
No, that's right. And also, you know, being that I'm in my mid-40s, it's not exactly a fun time on the open market for me. You know what I mean?
Oh, I don't think Colonial Penn would sell me burial insurance right now.
Well, and it's not, I don't smoke or drink or all those sort of things, but it doesn't really matter. I'm too old, and I don't have $800 a month to pay for minimal coverage, which is what the private market is. You know, of course, I've looked into it, right?
Oh, sure. And that minimal coverage for that kind of money, and what's your deductible?
Well, exactly. You know, it's just thousands upon thousands where, like I said before to you, I might as well just pay out of pocket, which is what I do. I'm no worse for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And
I'm not paying no asshole premium.
Yeah, and pray God that nothing serious happens.
Oh, well, that's it. You know, that's the only insurance I have is pray that I don't get ill. And, you know, what a way to live. I mean, you're under stress. You know, I ride my bike and I think, you know, Sandra, this is kind of dumb because I could fall off. Then what? You know what I mean? But you got to keep living, though, right?
Right. But suddenly, the most mundane of things take on an ominous twist where disaster lurks around the corner.
Yeah, and it's just sort of. And so when I hear these people going on and on about, you know, how any sort of public option or assistance from the government is foreboding, I'm like, are you serious?
Well, you know, that Grassley freak, you know, we've got to keep the government from running health care.
Why?
The only reason there's a problem with Medicare is because of the abuses to which it has been subjected over the years, you know, not by patients and not even so much by doctors. But then again, there are the for-profit health care firms, the hospital corporations and so forth. Hospital Corporation of America comes to mind, HCA, the single largest criminal defendant in Medicare fraud in history.
Right. Is that Bill Fisk business?
Yeah, that was the Frist family, followed by, what's his name, that Rick Scott creep?
Oh, God, the one who's trying to run. Yeah, no, all these people are just, I mean, I swear they're sociopaths. They must be, you know, to operate in the way they do. Because what do you need? A billion, one guy got $1 billion for compensation. It's like, good Lord.
And what do you do with it?
Well, no, and not only that, but, I mean, it's so destructive to society, these sort of outsized payouts. And that's because the tax rate has been cut so low that it's worth it now for these fiends to take all the money from the corporations instead of reinvesting like they used to when your tax rate was 70%. You would just plow it back in, right?
Yeah, and thereby the company becomes more productive, more profitable, more...
Right, it's called social engineering, and I'm sick of these people pretending, oh, I'm free. No, you're not free. You see what I mean? This whole freedom shit, that's a load.
No, we are all being acted upon far more than we are actors.
No, and I'm sick of it because they're saying, oh, I don't want to be forced into doing this, you know, whatever. But
yeah,
because
I'm free to be stupid.
Yeah, but I'm forced to put up with a country that spends $636 billion on a defense bill.
Yeah. Right.
No chit-chat about that, not even a word one. And I'm thinking...
Where was my freedom when L. Paul Bremer was losing $9 billion in the sofa of the Coalition Provisional Authority?
Right. I mean,
where was my freedom then?
Yeah. That whole argument is just such a load. So I don't really know. I haven't even been following those town halls because it's just so...
Well, now they're laughing about it, Sandra, since you haven't been following them. I have. Yeah,
the media.
No, the right wing congressmen are laughing about this. In particular, I have here Representative Todd Akin, Republican from Missouri, who was talking at a freedom conference earlier this week.
That word again.
Yeah, see, freedom fries, freedom toast, freedom conference, you know, freedom freedom execution, yeah, whatever.
He's
carrying on. He said, different people from Washington, D.C. have come back to their districts and had town hall meetings. They almost got lynched. And the whole crowd goes, yay, hooray.
Wow.
They applaud almost got lynched. And then he says, well, I assume you're not approving lynchings because we don't want to do that. And the chin, ha, 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 ha. Oh, he's funny. We don't want to lynch. Ha, ha, ha.
Nice use of that whole frame. You know what? These people are so disgusting. I guess they're just going to fall back to default, which is the ignorant white voters. Is that their base now? Just done with it.
It's the Confederacy and Confederate fifth columnists in other semi-normal states.
Well, that brings me to the other news I thought was interesting is that Obama's poll numbers are now at 50%. So his pandering to whatever he's pandering to...
Corporate America.
...isn't really working out too well for him, you know. And I think it's because of this wishy-washy, you know, not coming down on real progressive solutions like he promised, you know.
And the thing, and I don't know who's managing his polling in the White House. I remember... You know, some of us saw episodes of West Wing and, well, sir, your numbers are down. I don't know who does his polling, but somewhere along the way, they've got to be asking the question, you know, do you want more decisive action? Because this status quo business, you know, and of course, you know, every time the poll numbers drop, you know, Obama's numbers in the toilet. Of course, he's still got 30 points to give before he gets to George Bush.
Well, no, and also, though, he's not. I'm just saying, though, but they are falling. And unfortunately, you know, the way my mind works is, oh, Lord, don't let them fall too much or, you know, there might be some war or some attack. You know, I don't trust these fools.
Yeah, the false flag is always at the bottom of the pole and ready to be run up.
You know, and after what we went through with 9/11, I'll never look at any act of aggression the same way again, okay?
No, me either. You know, I saw...
Against us or out against someone else?
I saw some stupid little headline at one of the for-profit media sites the other day, and it said something like, Al-Qaeda number two slams Obama, or whatever.
Number two? How many number twos?
It's all number two.
Good Lord. I mean, are they serious with that?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Al-Qaeda number two.
Oh, no. Them freaks they picked up and was in North Carolina. I mean, that's some fake bullshit, too. I don't
Yeah, see, I heard that whole story while I was gone, Sandra, and there was something about that that just didn't ring quite right. You know, because this dude's apparently after, I am in love with jihad.
Oh, please.
You know, I'm thinking this guy's real Richard Reed shoe bomber material.
Right. No, it all seems kind of simple, you know, in more ways than one. I'm not buying none of it, you know. It's just, it don't ring true.
Yeah, see, I mean, I don't doubt that there are people in the world who hate our guts.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt that some of them might think that they've got good reason for doing so. But, you know, the idea, no, these simplistic, you know, usually there's a, I hate your guts because, as opposed, oh no, this is homegrown terrorism.
Or they hate our freedoms or something.
And it turns out that, you know, they hated our mortgages, and lucky them, they didn't have them.
Oh, God. Well, the only other thing, because I got to go, but the only other thing I wanted to bring up was, I almost laughed out loud, right? Murdoch says, we'll be charging for our content. Are they serious? Charge away. I don't know. It just made me laugh that he's predicting, well, he's promising that all his newspapers and sites will be charging now. And it's like, please do. All of the for-profit media should do that. Watch how quick that shit comes to an end.
Well, you know what's, I don't know if you saw this or not, but I caught this in an email the other day. Apparently, the AP and the Associated Press is as bad at this as anybody. You know, they started a lot of this garbage. And they charged a guy, and he's got the proof where they made him pay and everything. They charged him for content that they didn't write.
Well,
the Associated Press charged this guy for quoting a letter by Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, shit. Okay, so now Thomas Jefferson stuff is now... Oh,
but,
please.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson now belongs to the Associated Press.
No, this whole thing is a joke. I mean, mainly because, like you just described, it'd be very difficult to decide who owns the content. But more interesting, they don't... it's all crap, so how dare they... think that I or anybody else who thinks is going to pay for that. They can just charge all they want. I got other places and other ways of getting, you know, my news. You see what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a joke. So I encourage it. I laughed at
it. Oh, yeah, come on. And, you know, Rupert, make sure you set those prices nice and high to reflect the quality of your work.
Right. I think that they're as much in a bubble, or much more in a bubble than I thought. If he actually is sitting around thinking somehow they're going to extract funds. I already pay $50 a month for my high-speed internet. What more do you want?
Well, exactly. And how is this not sort of a backdoor backdoor rebranding and re-commercializing of the internet in the first place?
Well, no, there is that, which is the worry. But what I'm saying, though, is the product that they want to attempt to backdoor it through is a joke. The quality of the news from the for-profit media is very bad. I'm not going to pay for it, and I'm sure no one else will either.
No, you know, anytime I go to the CNN website and refer to it on the show here, it is without fail to make sport of them.
Right, to ridicule and take it apart because it's crap. So New York Times tried to charge for a minute. And that didn't last.
Yeah, that worked.
Long.
No.
And this is not going to work either. So, I don't know. I just thought I'd bring that up because I just was so, I'm thinking, what? Good luck with that.
Yeah, and the guy that got charged for Thomas Jefferson was something like $12.
And he paid, huh?
Oh, well, to prove a point.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Because this thing was, the whole thing was a setup, and the Associated Press just looks like a bunch of avaricious bastards.
Well, I think it's time for me to go visit, Lawrence Lessig, you know, that lawyer from Stanford?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's time for me to go visit his website because, you know, he has an interesting take on the whole sort of managing content for the Internet, which basically boils down to you really cannot be, you know, trying to set up a financial model, you know?
Yeah, that it, because it, you mean like a for-profit model? Yeah, because
well,
it
won't. Well, yeah, and the copyright issues, it's all really up for grabs, which is why people are freaking out about Google and how they're trying to catalog books. It's like, hello, what do you do? You know, and people are starting to wonder, well, what's going on? You know, so.
And yeah, and it all leads down this pernicious path toward this licensing concept. And of course, anybody who's ever clicked on a EULA on a software installation, you know, I agree to give up my firstborn in the yada 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 to be able to load, you know, a media player or some such foolishness.
Right.
This concept of non-ownership, the idea that, I mean, and if you go back and you look at it in a more tangible form, like a 45 RPM record or a printed book, the idea that you pay for money and you take it home and it's not your book. You merely have a license to possess the book.
Oh, like the 1984 that they so-called deleted. That was creepy.
Yeah.
You heard about that, right?
Yes, yes. And this is, I understand. Nobody wants artists to get paid more than me. But the idea that the corporate superstructure above the artist is going to create is creating this notion of licensure, whereby, you know, under their theory, let's say, you know, one of my favorite books, To Kill a Mockingbird. Let's say that I want to sit down and read that to my family. Under this idea of licensure, I can't do that.
Well, it's the same thing with Happy Birthday, you know,
right.
That's owned, and it's just like a joke. You know, all of this copyright stuff is dubious at best and hanging on by a thread because unless they utilize the government again to shut down or make a switch for the Internet, good luck with that. Because as soon as they come up with something, some enterprising anarchist comes up with some other way of getting around it. Trust me, I do a lot of BitTorrent type stuff is all kinds of stuff out there, you know?
Yeah, John Fox just sent me a message. He said the 1984 thing was so odd. Amazon thought they had rights to it. The supplier didn't have the rights they claimed, and hence the reversal of the sales. You know, just... It, and
yeah,
it, we're going to... And you know, like I said, I understand there's a dynamic involved here because one of my personal heroes, Mark Twain, was constantly having his work ripped off. He'd be 2 months away from publishing something in the United States, only to find out that some British publishing house had already put it out on the stands there, without his consent, without paying him. And that's the other side of it, and that's wrong. But to respond, you know, to respond to the problem by saying, well, you know, nobody ever owns anything, really, and this is all just licensure. I mean, I know you got to go, but, you know, the classic example of this is that stupid Microsoft Zoom.
Oh, what is that, some software?
Well, Zoom was their attempt to take a bite out of the iPod market. And it was this huge, clunky thing. And you subscribed to Microsoft's music system, and as long as you maintained your $10 a month subscription, you could listen to your music on your Zune. But the minute that your subscription lapsed, all your music went away.
Well, they're having that issue with the, you know, the iPhone with the AT&T. They're doing some sort of weird machinations, and, you know, people are rebelling against it. You know, they want to be decoupled from AT&T, you know. They want to be able to use their iPhones in other manners, so to speak.
Right? Or they want to be able to use their iPhone on another carrier.
Well, you know what I mean? Any other way. I mean, and you're looking at how, like you said, pernicious these entities are, but I don't know. I'm a bit more positive. I just don't really think they're going to be able to sort of two-tier it and charge, and I just don't know how.
No, but I really do want Rupert Murdoch to charge, you know, $100. $100 a story, Rupert. You know, you might be on Beans and Franks by tomorrow, but so he's got to have the money.
I can't wait to see how that plays out because, like I said, I just don't see the public after being gouged for service every month is going to say, oh, okay, you know, I'll pay up more. Come on. You know? But anyway, listen, I'll sign off because I got to go. But
all right. Take care, Sandra. We'll talk soon.
All right, bye.
Bye now. It's a, it, you know, it is. It's a delicate balance because the guy who writes the or woman who writes the stuff, and the person who performs it, those are the artists in the process. The performance end is where the art is. The painting on the, you know, you paint the painting, you write the words, you sing the music, you play the instrument, you dance the dance, you recite the poetry that you write. And I want the arts to, Lord knows I wish the arts were more vibrant. We need, you know, during the Depression, part of FDR's recovery involved a significant investment in the arts. We still haven't seen that. And there was a brilliant blossoming of the arts community out of that. The Harlem Writers Project? What was it, the Federal Theater? There was an entire generation of actors who passed through that, and they were the best that we had. But that, of course, is socialism. Right? Yeah. But I was not kidding in the least in what I said to Sandra. I want you to hear Todd Akin, Repiglickin from Missouri. But more than hearing Todd Akin, I want you to hear that dripping fanged right wing Repiglickin crowd.
This particular meeting, in a way, is a little bit unique. People from Washington D.C. have come back to their districts and have town hall meetings, and they almost got lynched. And so the people are so mad.
Listen to those eliminationist scumbags. They applaud the concept of lynching.
And so, the people are so
bad. Yeah, get a rope. Let's go find us one of them liberal Democrat Obama supporting socialists and let's hang his ass. Let's give him a good fair trial and hang him.
I tell you, there's no
knee slapper quite like a good lynching joke for a knee slapper out there among the right wing. By golly, I tell you what I mean. That's some funny stuff. I don't care who you are. That's funny, that lynching. Sweet Jesus.
Is people were really upset at some of this legislation, and with very good reason they were upset.
Yeah, Representative Akin, with very good reason they're upset, because they've had a bunch of filthy, bought and paid for lies told to them by your side of the aisle and by the corporate sons of bitches who line your pockets, you miserable, graft-laden animal. God, I'm really... It started with Grassley tonight, and it ain't going to get any better. Now they are endorsing lynching. It is a verified fact that one member of Congress has been physically assaulted, which I guess would constitute battery at the common law. That's where we are. The killers are on the loose, and as Hunter S. Thompson once said, the hogs are in the tunnel, and they will travel on a road of bones. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Not a lot. How you been?
I'm getting along. How about you?
I've been ripping my hair out as about a normal rate as ever.
Vince, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. I can usually
pick. Wound me.
Huh?
Wound me.
I wound you? No, I had you. Haven't heard from you in a while, and it takes a moment to process.
Yeah, I know. I've been, well, you know how it is. You got to try and keep your head above water, especially in today's world.
No, Lord knows. Yeah, just trying to keep the lupine pest off the porch. I know a little bit about that.
The healthcare thing has been hitting kind of a personal note with me lately. I also had a story with one of my coworkers I wanted to share. If I'm not interrupting.
No, go right ahead. You're not interrupting at all.
Well, one of the reasons I've been scarce lately is I've had a medical thing come up. I'm all right. It's nothing to worry about, but I had some heart troubles come up. I actually passed out at work a couple of weeks ago, and they had to bring all the ambulances and everything and wire me up to all the machines and all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Everything's all right. It looks like I've got some sort of, what do they call it, a tachycardia going on in my heart right now. It seems to be caffeine-induced. I've apparently been chugging down too many sodas and too many of those energy drinks, which, by the way, are really not good for you, I found out.
No, not so much.
But that's under control right now. I'm going to the doctor tomorrow to see what's going on. But, it's a good thing I've got health insurance. And, even then it's costing me. It's not cheap by my standards. I mean, it's a heck of a lot cheaper than it would be if I didn't have insurance. We're talking about the difference of, it's kind of a stretch on my budget combined with, oh, my God, we're dead.
Yeah, what a choice.
Yep. Yeah, none of the stuff they're doing is breaking my bank. But moving on to the story, I came across. I was at work the other day, and I was speaking. I was basically doing. I do this thing every other month where basically I'm one of the tier two folks in my center, and I was sitting here working and. One of my coworkers had to make a comment about how, about that socialist who was going to destroy the country.
Right, that one.
And I heard that, my ears perked up, and you know me. Can't keep my mouth shut.
No.
Even though I really should. I'm at work, I know better, but you know what? You pissed me off now. And we just turned around and went all at it, and basically, what turned up was, her argument was, oh, God, he's going to take my money, and he's going to do this, and he's going to lead us to the road to ruin and everything. And I turned around, I started going, we started going on counterpoint with the stupid health argument. And, you've heard the arguments before. I don't need to get right into it. And I basically just completely, was basically just shoving facts in her face, which she was throwing around. And finally, I just said, she said, you know what? The government doesn't need to be involved in what is an issue between me and my doctor. And I'm not sure. Do you read Daily Coast by any chance?
Sometimes, not a whole lot, just because there's so much other stuff that I have to read. But
all right,
yeah.
there's an article on the Daily Coast. They put it up about a week and a half or so ago, and I wish I had it in front of me because I'd love to read it. But on the other hand, it would take a while. It's basically a letter. It's written in the style of one of those people who doesn't agree with it, and he's writing Obama to explain to him, why the government doesn't need to be involved in his health care. But it's satirical.
When you said that, the idea that this woman looked at you and said, "I just don't want the government interfering with my relationship with my doctor." I know the voice that said it. I can almost hear it. I can halfway see her. And how you didn't look at her, unless it's abortion, right?
Well, no, I didn't even bring that up, although that probably would have been a good one as well. But anyways, have I ever told you about me being bipolar?
No.
Okay, well, they're interesting Vince fact number 365. I am bipolar. I was diagnosed I've got type 2 bipolar disorder, which is also known as manic depression. I was diagnosed about a year and a half ago. And
okay.
What happened was I was diagnosed at a time when I didn't have any health insurance. And what basically happened was she was going on about this, and I was like, getting back to the letter, I said, the letter basically was like, how the get the letter was, well, you know what? It should be between me and my doctor. Oh, wait, well, actually it should be between my doctor and the health insurance adjuster. Oh, but then it should be my doctor, the insurance company's doctor. Basically, every time he tried to say, well, it should be this, and then they're like, oh, wait a minute, but there's all these people that's got to go to the insurance company. Finally, when we got done, he's like, well, fine. I don't think the government needs to be involved. It needs to be between my doctor, the health insurance doctors, the person who's responsible for doing the claim.
The accounting department, the advertising department, the marketing department, yes.
Exactly, and that's the gist of the letter. So I basically turned around and I said, you know what? I thought about this letter. I said, you know what? I'm going to send you this letter. And she said, don't send me anything. I ain't interested in any of that. And I said, wait a minute. We can't have an honest debate, and I can't show you a piece of support. And she said, you know what? When you've owned a business, you can talk to me about stuff like this. And I looked at her, and I said, I've owned a business. And she goes, you know what? When you've owned a house, and I said, I'm not going to name names. I said, look, are you going to just keep picking things out of your ass until you find something I haven't done and then try and use that to dissuade my entire argument? You know? And then she's like,
yeah,
you
yes,
know
I
what?
Am.
Well, she's like, well, you know what? It just doesn't need to be done this way and yada, yada, yada. And you know what? You know, you need to go back on. She happens to know about my condition because me and her were actually pretty good friends up until this point. As far as I know, we still are. I haven't actually had an occasion to talk to her since then. But you know, she was like, well, you know what? You need to go get right back on your medication because I don't think you're taking enough of it. And I said, you know what? It's really funny that you mentioned that because, you know, if I had actually had health insurance, I could have been diagnosed about 6 years ago. And could be so further along on my life right now. The reason I was diagnosed was because there is a very nice gentleman where I used to live up in Georgia who is running the local NAMI chapter. I can't remember what NAMI specifically stands for, but it's basically a mental health advocacy group. And, you know, he basically, we came across each other when we were both, attending meetings of the Democrats of Camden County, which was the organization we both belonged to at the time. It's a local Democratic Party group. And he very early recognized that I had some issues and had me come by, and he tested me and did everything completely out of his pocket, and that's how I got diagnosed. He was still licensed. He was still practicing. He wrote me the prescriptions for all the medication. You know, the amount of time and everything that he invested in me, if I had to actually pay for it at the time with no insurance, would have practically bankrupted me.
No, it would have broken you, most likely.
You know, and that's the only reason I was ever diagnosed. And it's, you know, I credit where I am today because of that. Because if he hadn't recognized it and gotten me the help that I need, I wouldn't have been good enough to get the job that I have now, do the things that I'm doing now. But you know what? That's exactly why we need health. Why we need health care for everybody in this flipping country. And I said that to her, and I was like, you know what, now if you want to sit here and argue about me about that, you can keep your private health care, and that's fine. But I'm talking about the people who simply don't have a choice, just like I didn't have a choice. And I said, if you've got something to come back with that, fine. Frankly, I don't want to hear it. And I got up and I walked out of the room.
And that's at the heart of this, of course, Vince, because there are a lot of people who don't have health insurance and saying, well, you know, we're going to make it affordable for you. B.S., the working poor, there's no such thing as affordable for the working poor. No, and I'm not suggesting that you are.
I was at the time.
But there's affordable is a bogus term in that discussion. Because if you're the working poor, a new transmission in your car, if it drops out and makes you unemployed, affordable doesn't mean anything there. New tires doesn't mean affordable. Look, I'm dealing with it here. I mentioned it the other night. I woke up Saturday or Sunday morning with the bedroom ceiling on me. Okay? Because we don't have the ability to pour a bajillion tons of money into a new roof here. You know, affordable can kiss my rear end. What people need is access to health care on a national single-payer basis so that monkey is off their back and they can go out and find meaningful work. And, of course, if that monkey's off their back, it's also off the employer's back. So it makes the employer better able to hire people and produce more.
Yeah, because that's how it's funny how these people who are always screaming about, you know, how we need to fix the economy and everything, but they don't want to fund education and they don't want to fund the ability for people to get basic health care. Because God knows, that's how you build a good economy off the backs of six stupid people.
You just said a mouthful, brother. Sick, stupid people.
Yeah, that's how you build a great economy, don't you know? Oh, that'll get you a great economy.
Yeah, and you know, I'm looking at the chat room here, Vince, and they're all saying hi. And
hi, everybody.
Sophie just said, Bush explained all of this, Bob. We all need medical savings plans. Just go to the bank, open a special account for medical expenses, put money in it, and don't use that money for anything except medical expenses. It's very simple.
Oh, if it's so very simple, where the hell am I going to get that money when?
Yeah, well, you're right, exactly. The printing.
To my rent. What remains of that 75%, then go 80% of that goes to my transportation in terms of fuel and everything. And whatever's left over probably goes to groceries. And if I'm lucky, I might get to go see a movie once a week. Okay, maybe I shouldn't go see that movie. I'm sure that $8 every month or so is really going to make a dent in my health care.
Yeah, 30 years from now, you'll qualify for what? A tenth?
I could get a physical 30 years from now.
Yeah, or maybe a tenth of a colonoscopy, where you've got a 1 in 10 chance that while the guy's up there, if he sees something precancerous, he might cut it out, because you could only afford a tenth of his service. Charming, ain't it?
Yeah, I know. Everybody has access to health care. Just go to the emergency room.
Yeah, go get stabilized and get your ass home and die, would you? Yeah. But, you know, even as you described with what you went through recently, you've got bills. I mean, I'm not trying to get personal or anything, but you've got bills and you've got health insurance.
Yeah.
And that $8 left over for the movie, guess what? No more movies. You're going to, you know, it just is. You've got a debt to service now. And debt service is a higher calling than religion in this country. Because to fail to pay one's debts is probably a greater sin than to deny Christ among most people in this country. Because that's what we worship. We don't worship God. We don't worship, no. We worship money. You know, we've gotten to the point, I don't know if you've seen the ads, but that little Geico? I guess they're phasing the lizard out, and now they've got talking...
Yeah, they got that stack of money.
Yeah, they got a talking stack of money.
It's not talking, it just stares...
Yeah, that's right, it just stares you down. You know what, I wish I had... Yeah, I wish I had all the wherewithal to shoot a video. I'd love, since apparently now I vaguely resemble a congressman... I'd love to shoot something in Washington that shows the congressman walking out of his office, walking down the steps of the Capitol, walking. Obviously, you know, congressman kind of. And then he stops at the curb, and he looks down, and there's that money giving him the stink eye. And, of course, you know, it have a little sign that says, you know, lobby money or something on it. Because that's what it is. And you know, how ironic that whole concept was come up with by an insurance company. You know, they've got money that can stare you down. Yes, they do.
Ironic how they're all, well, we can't be having no government health care unless it's for us, because we like ours.
Exactly. Oh, and our pop culture correspondent, David from Maine, has kindly sought out and found the Dear Mr. President letter from Daily Kos by Hunter.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I will share. It's kind of long, but some of it's probably worth sharing.
I be honest, I think the whole thing is worth sharing if it wasn't so long. But, I mean, condense it and get it out if you think it's worth it. I thought it was a very poignant letter.
Oh, anything that starts, Dear Mr. President, I'm writing you today because I'm outraged at the notion of involving government in healthcare decisions like they do in other countries. I believe healthcare decisions should be between myself and my doctor. And it'll flow from that, as you described. So you are okay, Vince? Oh, Vince? Vince? Technology. Vince, our buddy from... North Florida, formerly of South Georgia. Oh, okay, yes. And as a Finn, I think you should know the proper pronunciation of sauna is sona. Ha ha, I get a ha ha. No, boy. Now this, we're halfway through the program now, and it might be a jolly ride downhill to 9 p.m. Eastern time. So the Finnish contingent has chimed in, and let me also tell you that it turns out that our Norwegian contingent also chimed in earlier today, and with the talk of the lynch mobs and everything, you'll get a kick out of this. Our buddy Michael in Norway writes to say, just writing you a quick email to tell you I've really enjoyed the last couple of installments of The Horn. I'm sorry to hear about your roof and wish I wasn't in such a financial clinch so I could have contributed with a donation. The Horn is damn good radio and definitely worth a lot more than just these words. If you ever need the services of a graphic designer, music composer, producer, and media production geek, I'd be happy to lend a hand. You know what? Things happen all the time around here, and we are forever adding to those who contribute their time and effort to make this all happen. But Michael continues, he said, on a completely different note, I have a little fun fact for you from Norway. You were speaking the other night about Texas and rednecks, and in that regard, I thought perhaps I should tell you about a term we actively use in this country. Whenever something is out of control, chaotic, like, for example, when a bunch of kids go nuts on the playground or in the house, emotions running high and toys getting thrown around, we tend to say something that roughly translates as, it's Texas over there, or, whew, it's Texas in there. Mind you, the term is not, it's like Texas, da-da-da, but rather, Texas has become the adjective. Thought perhaps this would give you a chuckle. Oh, and it does, Michael. Thank you very much. What's that noise? Oh, pay the children no mind. It's Texas in there. Maybe that's the Norwegian version of forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. And let's see what's going on the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Bob?
Yes.
It's Janie from Miami.
Oh, Janie, wonderful to hear from you.
It's sauna.
Sauna. Oh, okay. I thought it was sauna.
I'm finished.
Yeah, only I can screw it up twice. It's a sauna.
Well, when my father was in the Air Force, and we moved around a lot, and we lived in Utah for a long time, and I remember hearing sauna, and I went home, and I asked my father what a sauna was. He's like, goddamn Americans can't even pronounce anything.
Sauna. It is burnt into the back of my brain now.
Well, thank you. We actually use it as a bath. It's not a luxury per se.
Well, and you know that a lot of cultures have discovered that along the way. The Mesoamerican peoples who were wiped out by the Spaniards. One of the things that amazed the Spaniards when they landed in central Mexico and saw the marvel that was the most brilliant city on planet Earth, Tenochtitlan, one of the things that amazed them was that they didn't throw their caca out the window like the Europeans did. They flushed it away and dealt with it that way. And the other thing that amazed them was that they had this persistent habit of bathing, and the way they did it was via steam huts, which are basically the same thing, aren't they?
Well, and it was amazing because I remember when we did live in Utah that my father, I got a really, really bad sunburn, and he's like, go to sauna. And I'm like, are you nuts? And sure enough, it took away the pain from the sunburn. It was amazing. They're amazing.
And that's we're talking here about dry heat, right?
No, actually, it's moist heat. The saunas that are in, like, gyms and all that kind of stuff, they're not real saunas. Like, a real sauna, you have steam. You throw steam on it, and it's like a steam bath.
Yeah, that's the water on the hot rocks part.
Right, right. I mean, I guess technically it would be dry heat, but, I mean, you throw the steam on it, and that's what makes you sweat, and that's what's so therapeutic about it, I guess. But it's like a room, and like on Saturday night, everyone gets together, and the men all go to sauna, and the women are, like, doing dishes. I mean, I guess sort of.
And I know there's a cultural disconnect and a sort of at oddsness, but this is this the same concept that the Russians have with the banya?
I'm not familiar with that.
Communal social bathing and sitting there and letting the steam pull the poisons out of the body and.
In Minnesota, a lot of people, they have their saunas. They're right on the lake, and they have a slide coming out, and they go into the lake. They get, you know, they steam up, and they go and cool off in the lake, and then in the winter, they go and roll in the snow or whatever. I mean, it's.
I must admit, I know I'm missing something by not being in a little bit more frozen culture.
I don't know. I mean, well, currently I'm living in a sauna. I live in Miami.
Right. Yeah, it's all around you. You don't know whether to breathe the air or lick it.
Oh, God. It's awful. But I am considering moving to Morgantown. I have a cousin in Morgantown, actually. And I love West Virginia.
That's a huge cultural shift, Miami to Morgantown, I got to tell you.
Yeah, but I'm from Minnesota. I mean, Miami is a godforsaken hellhole. I mean, it's just, I lived in L.A. for a long time, and I hated that. I thought that it was so pretentious and blah, blah, blah. And then I moved to Miami, and damn, Miami makes L.A. look real.
Oh, wow. I've never heard that before. But that so Miami is an even more of a la-la land? Well,
it's unbelievable.
Morgantown, I have to tell you, is a very, very livable town. It's in the far north of the state. It is relatively away to the extent that you can be away in West Virginia. It's relatively away from mountain removal. The university culture there is pretty good, and you know you're only 70 miles or so from Pittsburgh, so there's real culture available there. Because I'm a real geek. I adore Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is one of my favorite cities in the United States.
Yeah.
But there's some beautiful state parks around Morgantown. There's a gorgeous biking and hiking trail that runs along the Monongahela River up toward the Pennsylvania state line. There's the excellent dining. Last time I was there, I noticed that they've got a really, Central Appalachia, a really reputable little sushi joint there now. Several good restaurants. The theater department there. And the music department at WVU are both top shelf and have a lot to offer. I love the place. I really, really do.
Well, I was going there over the 4th, and I went to your website, and Elizabeth Kucinich was going to be there. And I was, like, all excited, and then I looked at the date, and it was like it had already happened. And I'm like, oh. Do you remember when that happened?
Yes. Elizabeth, and I can tell you from personal experience that Elizabeth Kucinich is an amazing human being. I admire her beyond my ability to cast it in words.
Well, Dennis is also, I mean, he's absolutely my favorite politician. I mean, he is unbelievable.
And in many ways, he puts the lie to the current definition of politician. I almost hate referring to him as one.
Absolutely.
Dennis Kucinich is an extremely decent human being who happens to be involved in the political process.
Yes, exactly. That's a nice way of putting it.
Because, you know, when I think of politician, I think of Max Baucus. I think of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood. Those are Jim DeMint, James Inhofe. Those are politicians. A politician is one of these miserable blue dog creepy people who would sell us down the river for a shot at picking up a nickel on the sidewalk.
Did you hear that a lot of these healthcare? I'm not recalling exactly. I don't know if it was these people that are disrupting the congressmen when they go back, but a lot of them are funded by coal.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And the fraudulent letter scandal, have you been following that?
Which one?
It turns out that it was the coal industry that funded Bonner and Associates, who in turn turned around and wrote a bunch of forged letters from ethnic groups directed to a freshman Virginia representative named Tom Perriello, completely bogus letters with made-up letterhead. You know, there's no way it was a mistake. It was an intentional act. And there's more and more letters coming out, and they were all done at the behest of Americans for Clean Coal Electricity.
Yeah. Did you see the Coen brothers' little video on clean coal?
Oh, I loved it, where they had the clean coal spray.
Yes.
That stuff is delightful because the coal industry has no way to counter that. The best they can come up with are some CGI bugs who say, now, we love living on mountaintop removal sites.
So where is Massey Energy based?
That's a harder question to answer than might seem it might seem on its face. Technically, Massey is headquartered. They're an out-of-state corporation. They're headquartered in Richmond, Virginia. But then you have to dig in and find who owns Massey. That film that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, the Mine War on Blackberry Creek, pointed out the fact that at the same time that labor unrest was going on in the 1980s, Massey was actively engaged in mining interests in South Africa that involved, for all intents and purposes, slave labor. So that's the classy outfit you're dealing with. But the fact of the matter is, and I'm glad you mentioned this, some of these big banks that we have bailed out, well, our bailout money is being used to fund Massey, if you can imagine it. J.P. Morgan Chase comes to mind. And they are an active financier for Massey Energy. And yet at the same time, they claim that they're green.
Who, Massey or J.P. Morgan Chase?
J.P. Morgan Chase.
Well, we are totally Orwellian now. You know, I mean, organic Rice Krispies, I mean, please. And then now Rice Krispies is, like, talking about antioxidants. I mean, are you kidding me?
I'm waiting for organic high fructose corn syrup.
Ugh. I know. High fructose corn syrup totally freaks me out. I mean, I try and eliminate that completely from my diet, but when I go to work, the only ketchup they have is Heinz, and I know that there's high fructose corn syrup in that. And I like to have potatoes at breakfast. I know that it's really bad for the glycemic index and blah, 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 but whatever.
You sound like you know a little bit more about medical science than you have any business knowing.
Well, I'm a nurse.
Yeah, why did I think?
And this swine flu thing is totally freaking me out. About last year, I think the infection control nurse came around and was trying to get everyone to get a flu vaccine, and I never get the flu vaccine because, I guess. And she's like, well, at such and such hospital, they require all their cardiac ICU nurses to get the flu vaccine. And I said, well, I guess it's a good thing that I don't work there. And she was really mad at me for not getting it. And I'm really concerned about this whole push to get the swine flu vaccine. I mean, I emailed you before about that Baxter had applied for the vaccine a year before.
Right, I saw that, and I read that.
Out, which, and it's not even actually the swine flu. I mean, it's like a hybrid. It's not, you know, I mean... And even just your basic flu vaccine is from the virus from the year before. So it's not necessarily going to protect you from the new virus that's coming out.
Right. All they can do is, if they are operating honestly, is to try to keep up with where the virus was last year.
Right. Which isn't necessarily going to protect you. I mean, it's just money. You're making money for the vaccine companies.
And, of course, that's heavily subsidized by the government.
Yes. It's funny how that works, right?
Right. They don't want government involved in health care unless there's a nickel in it for them. I mean, that's the government that they want involved in health care.
And this Lysol, I heard you talking about Lysol. And don't use any antibacterial anything. Just use soap and water.
That is...
The antibacterial is totally screwing the environment.
Well, not only that, but isn't it also true that because, you know, a few years ago, the market was flooded with antibacterial dishwashing detergent and right. Blah, 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 blah.
Toilet paper.
Right, and doesn't... Yeah, I know. But doesn't this also contribute to a faster mutation rate for these bugs? In other words, the more you use the antibacterial soap, the more the bacteria mutate so as to be resistant to it. I mean, isn't it the whole antibiotic thing all over again?
Right, and that's why we have MRSA and VRE and all these resistant organisms, because it protects you. Like, the studies that I've read is it protects you 20 seconds longer than normal soap and water.
Right.
And the environmental implications behind it are, you know, I mean, they're finding it in Greenland, in the fish. They're finding it, I can't remember what the name of the chemical is, but, I mean, they're finding it in places that it shouldn't be. So, essentially, when we use it, it gets into the water supply. And, I mean, it's really, really screwing with us. And I know, I mean, working in a cardiac ICU, they're like, oh, you know, you need to use antibacterial, blah, blah, blah. And I always tell my patients, do not use that. It's not good. And they try and put everyone in a plastic bubble, and that's not good. You need to go to the farm and play in the poop. You know, you need to get exposed so that you build your immune system up so that you're not susceptible to all this crap.
I understand exactly what you're talking about. Because, yeah, in fact, I was having a conversation about local raw honey last night. And one of the, you know, I've been told that one of the best ways to stave off local allergies is to make sure that you keep some, you know, find a beekeeper in your area. It's easier in a rural area like this, I imagine, than it is for you. But find a beekeeper in your local area who has raw, unprocessed honey that, you know, is from the local flora. And
right.
that will serve as an anti-allergen.
Well, and I had heard some study about that we used to have parasites in our body that... And I don't know, a lot of pig farmers have these parasites. And it was on Tom Hartman a couple of weeks ago that he was discussing this and having all these parasites in our body that were helping our immune system. And now that we're, like, in a sterile society, that's why we're having more asthma and we're having more... I mean, every kid that I deal with at work has reflux. And it's like that, you never had reflux with kids before. Why is everyone having reflux?
Right, because and in some instances that reflux is caused by what? An out of control growth of H. pylori in the stomach?
Right. And well, who knows? I mean, who knows what we're doing? I mean, I really think that we're totally poisoning ourselves with our food supply and just going about our life.
Have you ever read Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel?
No, actually.
I highly recommend it because, you know, his thesis, and it's a considerable read and worth every instant that you spend with it. You know, his thesis is that guns, germs, and steel are what made basically white Europe able to take over the rest of the world. And that it was the combination of the development of those technologies, plus the fact that they had latent diseases with them that killed off everything in their wake. You know, if you look, for instance, at the response of the native peoples again when the Europeans arrived in the New World, you see massive die-offs. You see, we're pretty sure now that there were that some of those. Oh, it was it's a lost culture, and we don't know where they went. They died. They didn't even know that they had had germ warfare practiced on them, because, you know, the white Europeans were on the Atlantic coast, but by virtue of the trade networks that existed among the first peoples, boom, there you go. And it gets carried from white guy to native person to village, village to next trading partner to next trading partner, and the next thing you know, an entire continent that had more people on it in 1491 than lived on the European continent has suddenly been depopulated.
But weren't we wrapping smallpox in blankets and giving them to the Native Americans as well?
That came later.
I don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I celebrate Native American Assassination Day.
You know, we never have our Thanksgiving meal around here without remembering what it really is all about, because the first Thanksgiving was declared, I believe, by Massachusetts Governor William Bradford to celebrate the slaughter of some heathen barbarian Indians.
Jesus. Isn't that an interesting... You know, I mean, that always amazes me that all these white people come in and slaughter the so-called savages. I'm like, hello?
Well, you know, you mentioned sauna, and we talked about the steam huts of the Mesoamericans. You know, the sweat lodge is an old and honorable tradition among North American Indian people. And just being clean was one of those traditions as well. There's a story here, and it's not a story, it's true. Back during the days when the white people were pushing through the Appalachians and toward, you know, toward the Ohio and toward the Mississippi, there were certain concessions made by the British Crown that said, no, that won't happen. We're going to stay where we are. And that was one of the flashpoints for the initiation of the revolution at the Battle of, well, the white people word is Point Pleasant. The Indian word is Tuendi Way. It's here in West Virginia, and it actually was the first conflict in what became the revolution. And what you had there, the great conflict with the first peoples here in this region. And at one point, a settlement was raided by some Shawnee folk. And they carried off the women folk. And one of the women folk they carried off was a woman by the name of Mary Ingalls, not of Little House on the Prairie fame. But they carried her off.
I thought I'm a little sensitive about that. No, just kidding.
No, I understand. just because Ingalls. But anyway, her name was Mary Ingalls, and they carried her away and her children. And I think they carried away a German woman from Pennsylvania, and they took them off across the Ohio River to their settlement, and she was there for a while, and she was exposed to their life ways, but one of which included bathing. And she could not wait, and she eventually escaped, and her story is called Follow the River, and she followed the river back home to her settlement in what was then Virginia, where she could be assured that she would never have to bathe again.
Ew.
Yeah, I mean, that's reality.
So the Native Americans are pro-bathing, and the white people are anti-bathing.
Yeah, the white Europeans, not so much.
Ah.
It's so much simpler to throw your out the window instead of, you know, keeping the disease down. And yeah, you get the idea.
Well, as a Virgo, I like to at least shower twice a day. So I guess I would... Well, I've always connected more with... I remember in high school, or maybe it was college, whatever, and witches. Oh, witches, they're evil, you know?
Right.
I started doing research on witches, and I found no such evidence about them being evil. And I ended up thinking that was a really cool religion. You know, I mean, I'm not really a joiner, so I've never, like, you know, but as far as, like, spirituality, I mean, it's similar to the Native American, you know, I mean, all that stuff is just so much cooler than, you know, the fundamentalists in whatever country you want to.
Right, living that miserable life under the doom of some angry sky creature who might smite you at any moment for any reason or no reason at all.
Well, I never bought that crap. When we were living in Utah, we were going to move back to Minnesota, and I was raised Lutheran. And I was getting confirmed, and I always had questions. My poor pastor, I was like, okay, so what about, you know, if Jesus did, you know, and he was like, oh, God. And my mom would always kick me under the table, just shut up, you know, just get through this. And finally, actually, I was confirmed, and, you know, I mean, I'd always had questions about religion, and it wasn't being disrespectful, or it just never made sense to me. And it took a long time, but now my mom is on the same page with me and is very anti-religion. And it's not, I think after 9/11, when they had all those people go to Washington, D.C., they had like a Buddhist, a Jew, a Muslim, and everyone was like coming together, and they had like a Missouri Synod Lutheran come up to, and they were doing like an interdenominational faith healing whatever, and the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church tried to excommunicate, and probably did. I can't remember exactly what happened with that story, but I mean they really came down on him for, oh, you're letting the devil in, and you know, I mean, they, I mean, hello, we all bleed the same, you know. I mean, it's, I don't understand why religion is such a dividing force, because it's
because if religion is not a dividing force, then it's not good for the people at the head of that religion who are making a fortune off doing the dividing.
Absolutely. But I mean, ultimately, if these people would read the Bible and quit cherry picking the hateful shit out of it, we would be okay.
Yeah, or just recognize, but it sounds like a simple enough solution, but it's far from simple. To take someone who thinks that the Bible is literal truth and try to explain to them that no, even the people who wrote the book don't think anymore that a snake got gossipy with the first woman on the planet. And they can't get past it. Now, on
so
the...
And it's... They're made from a rib.
Right, yeah, you know, or a brisket, you know, whatever. And yet these are the same people who, if on Tuesday, one of their children walked up to them and said, Daddy, a snake talked to me. No, son, snakes can't talk. But on Sunday, they throw the entire reasonable world out the window, and on Sunday, snakes can talk.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, and by the way, in reference to the issue you raised about the swine flu vaccine, which we're not supposed to call swine flu, we're supposed to call it H1N1, thank you. Smithfield meatpacking, thank you very much for not calling it swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to raise the little hackles on the back of your neck. Walmart Stores, Inc., this is a story from Reuters. Our pal Sandra just passed it along to me. Walmart Stores, Inc. is discussing with U.S. health officials, sit down, the possibility of putting vaccination sites at some of its stores for swine flu inoculation campaigns this fall, a company official said on Thursday in this story. This is a story from July the 30th. Federal officials met with Walmart executives in Bentonville, Arkansas to discuss the issue. Dr. John Aguanobi, president of health and wellness for Walmart U.S., told public health leaders at a conference in Orlando. We're in discussions with CDC and others in local and state departments to see what role we might play. It might be we are a site. It may be help with logistics and with supply chain. They're going to leverage Walmart for this. And don't think, Walmart has never done anything for free in its existence.
No, they're a totally benign company. They just want what's best for us.
Right.
Have you seen those commercials that they've been running? Oh, my God. I need to, like, vomit every time I see them. They're like, showing this perfect... It's like Disney. I mean, they show this perfect family who's eating, like, E. coli-filled beef. You know? I mean, it's just like... And everything is all hunky-dory and,
You say it's Disney-like. Is there a chorus of children in the background singing, "It's Chinese crap after all"?
In my head. It is. And then I heard at my hospital we're getting these new badges that supposedly will be able to monitor how much we wash our hands.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And
do you ever just want to go and then be something else? I mean, I'm just asking. It takes a very special person to do health care.
Well, we have like this 15-minute script that they're trying to script us in everything that we say. And you just cannot script health care, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm totally unconventional in, you know, I mean, I'm like, okay, so blah, blah. You know, I mean, I'm like a fine wine. You need to get used to me. Or, you know, I mean, I'm not exactly nurse. You know, I mean, that's why I work in the ICU. I like my paralyzed, sedated orphans, you know, so I can go about my business, take care of my patient, and not have to deal with the crap. That's my ideal patient. But, you know, I mean, I can deal with parents and, you know, whatever. And I understand that it's a completely stressful situation. And, you know, I mean, and the healthcare is, like, so ridiculous. It, you know, I mean, it takes 5 hours to, you know, I mean.
Well, would your work life, and for that matter, the life outside of work, would your life be better or worse if the profit motive was taken out of what you're trying to do?
Of course. I mean, I think it is totally unethical to profit from illness. I mean, I've always been a big advocate of not being able to profit from illness. I mean, I think it's a sin if I were a religious person. But, I mean, to be able to profit from illness, I think, is so reprehensible.
Yeah. And there's a difference, and for me at least, there's a difference between people who are actively involved in the healing arts, as they're called, having a nice and decent life, because frankly, you're not going to be much of a doctor or much of a nurse if you're sitting there trying to take care of a patient and the front and back of your mind are consumed with whether or not your utilities are going to be cut off day after tomorrow.
Nonsense, though. I mean, I think that you can pay healthcare people. I mean, it's not the nurses that, you know, I mean, nurses are screwed no matter what. It's the doctors that are the ones that are worried about salary. And I know a doctor who was initially very pro, you know, the American system. And then he went from academics into private practice. And they screwed him. They screwed him over. You have to make your salary. You know, he had to go and, you know, get all these other certifications in order to make his salary. And it wasn't even his specialty. And, I mean, it's very corrupt. Academics is, I mean, like that study about the Mayo Clinic versus the doctors in Brownsville that owned all the imaging and all that stuff. I mean, if you have doctors that own imaging and labs, and so they're going to be like, you come in for a stubbed toe and they're, oh, well, you need an MRI, you know, I mean, and you need like these lab tests, and, you know, you don't need that. You have a stubbed toe. Go home, you know. but they're going to run tests because it's in their profit margin to do that. And you don't have that crap with salaried doctors.
No, you don't. And you don't. The best example I can come up with within my experience is you don't have that at a place like Cleveland Clinic. Because the doctors there are all fellows.
Which I don't. When you say fellow, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're a doctor.
No.
In my interpretation of that, it means that they are doing an elective after their residency, so they're not technically a doctor yet.
No.
So
we're,
I don't know.
No, we're like the cardiologist who had invented all kinds of neat cardiology angiogizmos, some of which he used on my dad. This guy, he was a fully functioning practicing doctor, but he was a fellow of the Cleveland Clinic Foundation, and as such, all of his needs were met. So that the nature of his practice, as he explained it to us, was I can see one person or 100 people a day, and the Cleveland Clinic Foundation just wants me to do the very best that I can with the patients that I see.
Well, and that's how it should be.
And you know, this is, of course, a discussion that could go on for hours and hours on end. But, you know, one of the other things that you've got to take into account is the lockdown that the AMA keeps on the number of people who can be physicians. And they do it by accreditation of medical schools. They do it by the number of which takes into account the number of people who are allowed to be admitted to the medical schools, which also takes into account the god awful fraternity hazing process that is involved in becoming a doctor. You know, what gets done to a resident, just because that's how it always has been doesn't mean that's how it always shall be.
Right. It's awful. I mean, I considered going to medical school, but then I was like, forget it. I can't. I mean, I don't. And even like with nurses, I mean, I know a lot of nurses that have gone on and become nurse practitioners, and there's no incentive to do that. I mean, they end up making less money and have to work at a clinic. I mean, right now I work 3 12-hour shifts a week, and there's a big push at our hospital to get higher education and become a nurse practitioner, and they're going to pay for, they give us like $4,000 a year to pursue that and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the salary for nurse practitioners, it's like $40,000 a year. I don't know. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and see, we see so much of that up here. You've got a supervising physician who has two or three... what are they called? PACs, certified physician's assistants. And they're the ones who actually see the patients. They're the ones who write the scripts. They're the ones who the nurse and the PA take the history and do the differential diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor sits up and you know, he's making $150,000, $175,000, $225,000 a year. And he's got four people that he's paying $35,000, $40,000, maybe $50,000 a year to, who are actually doing the doctoring.
Right.
And don't think for an instant, unless maybe I'm completely wrong, feel free to tell me. But I was going to say, don't think for an instant that this is because of quality of care. This is because the for-profit system has made it more profitable to pay people less to do more. And that's, you know, welcome to anarcho-randian capitalism.
Well, when I was in Texas, when I first graduated from nursing school, I went to Texas in Austin, fabulous city, and they were really trying to push me lending my license to nursing assistants to put in Foley catheters for urinary and...
Oh, that's scary.
And all that stuff. Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on your nursing assistant. I mean, if you had a competent nursing assistant, it would be fine. But if you have some idiot that's putting in a catheter on my license, you know, that makes me a little nervous.
Well, sure. Or, you know, something like an art line, you know, subclavian art line, something like that. You know, dear God,
This is, yeah. You know, and I know that at least around here, that's routinely done by non-physicians.
Ooh.
I saw it happen.
A subclavian art line?
Yeah. Done by a non-physician. Am I using the right term? Do you know what I'm talking? You know, for the.
I don't know that you could do a subclavian art line.
Well, it went in right by.
An art line. A subclavian usually would be a central line.
Well, this was, you know, going in right there by the collarbone, and down under the chest wall and into some major blood vessel to deliver, you know, high powered antibiotics.
That would be a central line. That wouldn't be an art line.
Okay.
An art line is what we use to monitor blood pressure, and you don't infuse anything into an art line other than normal things.
Okay, so this is a central. See.
You use that to draw blood. An art line is usually to just draw blood.
Okay. Well, this is,
but a subclavian would be a central line to give antibiotics and fluid and
exactly
all that stuff.
Yeah.
But to have a non-doctor doing that—that's a little scary.
I watched it done to my dad. I sat there in the room while it was done.
Who did it?
An RN.
Did it work?
My dad's dead.
Yeah, I know, but.
God, that's
your
brutal,
dad
but.
From the art line or the.
He was on his way out, and they were prolonging his life, but. You know, there were no overt problems from it, but
was in West Virginia?
Yeah.
That
yes.
An RN put in a central line?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a little surprising. Because, you know, he showed up, it was a guy, he showed up, and here's the tray, lots of really sharp, scary, pokey, pointy things, and... And I'm like, well, doctor, what do you... Oh, no, I'm not a doctor. Oh, okay. And, you know, not to doubt his talent or anything. He got the job done. But, again, these are the kinds of things that we aren't talking about in this healthcare debate.
Right.
And that is the fact that under this avarice-driven system that we have now, doctors aren't doctoring.
Right. They're just writing orders and then going off and golfing or getting laid or, you know, whatever.
Or getting laid while they're golfing, for all we know. Yeah. Wouldn't be the first time that's happened. Oh, what a wonderful conversation, though. I hope we'll hear from you more and more often.
You will. And I'll email you with little whatevers. And
I'm going
to remember how to say sauna.
It is a sauna forevermore. And give me the pronunciation on your name again, because...
Janny.
It is Janny?
Yes.
Okay. See, I got to have a little help here and there.
And actually, you know, I just donated to you, and if you want to keep my painting, you can keep my painting. I know you want a painting.
No, I've already been brought to the foot of the cross on that. So no, you will receive yours. And I was going.
No. I mean, save the postage, keep the painting. I mean, it's not. It's fine with me. Really.
No. But you need that to be seen down there where you are. Believe me, you do. So I've already sent. In fact, I've already sent your address off. So you will be getting the lovely package that is the print, and I was going to tell on you anyway and thank you for purchasing one.
Well, can you get that money from the $75? I don't have to re-donate?
No.
You get that money because I want you to go to Pittsburgh and I want to keep Horn Radio on.
I'm going to Pittsburgh, and the Horn is going to Pittsburgh, and you're all going to Pittsburgh with me. And we're gonna make this work. I've been communicating with Guy James. He's gonna be up there with me. It looks like that's going to be who's there is me and Guy, and possibly a couple of other individuals. But we will get the job done, and it's gonna be transformative.
Your show, oh my God, your show. I'm so addicted to your show. I mean, it's like I love your show.
Well, this is one of the few addictions that I would love to see spread.
Well, I keep trying. I post everything on my Facebook and trying to get converts, but I think most of the people hide my posts because I'm too political and they don't really give a shit about what I have to say. But there are a few people that will listen to me.
Beautiful.
So, hopefully. All right. It was awesome talking to you.
Oh, it was wonderful talking to you. And, you know, stay cool and not much need for the sauna down there since you're living in it. But.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
All right, Jenny. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, I love first-time conversations that may turn into long-term conversations. This is the little miracle that is the horn. I hate that word miracle. No, it's a desire to communicate and have interaction and long-term seeking out of. I'm talking with my hands here. If only we were doing video. A long-term search for solutions and answers. And Janie just opened so many doors in the healthcare debate that we've never touched before. And have to be talked about extensively. You know, where does the AMA fall in this discussion? Because it is, in point of fact, the AMA who keeps the chokehold on the production of and education of physicians in this country. Which is artificial scarcity. You know, the AMA creates an artificial scarcity of physicians in this country, just like OPEC pulls back on the spigot in the Middle East to create an artificial scarcity. No, we're not going to talk about peak oil right now. I know. But they manipulate the supply of oil. Massey Energy is sitting in Richmond, Virginia right now. The Patriot Energy, there was a story in the local press not too long ago. They're saying, well, you know, we're going to shut down this share of mine, and we're going to put a whole bunch of miners out of business. We're going to blame the environmentalists, but the fact of the matter is we're shutting this thing down because we're going to keep the coal in the ground, and we're going to limit the supply until the price goes back up, damn it, because we're not rich enough. And at what point in time, don't we have antitrust laws? The Sherman Act? I mean, is that just like a some sort of hallucination I have from a past life? Don't we have laws that speak to what happens when corporations and entities artificially attempt to manipulate the market? I think we do. I mean, the Sherman Act's laying there, not that anybody's using it unless we want to have a hearing about college freaking football. But it's there, and it's for this kind of stuff. Why should the American Medical Association maintain a stranglehold to create an artificial scarcity of physicians? And why aren't we talking about that inside this overarching debate about the quality and nature of health care in the United States of America? I just asked the question. If you've got answers, you're welcome to share them. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I just want to say what you were saying about that just now. You're speaking rationally, see, and that's the problem because
gets me in trouble every time.
If you go from the irrational side and you think about it, and you realize that laws for public citizens, it's a myth. We just get lucky, Bob. That's what it is. We just get lucky. Sometimes, you know, when people, when they go through court, when they have a lawsuit that is disingenuous, we get lucky. Sometimes it's the opposite, but that's the problem. We see it from that lens, and we need to take those glasses off. We need to take those blue blockers off. Take your blue blockers off, for God's sakes. Look at the sun.
Just not too long.
Yeah, just not too long. But that's the truth. I mean, and that's why pretty much the system can't be salvaged when you have a thought process like that. And I know that makes a lot of lawyers and people of legal minded frustrated. But look around you. Every single law is being breached or broken by corporate or upper class. And when one citizen gets out of line, You know, there's very few percentages. Very few. They don't get charged. They don't get fined, and they didn't do anything wrong, and their case is closed. But there's sight unseen. There's so many injustices going wrong in this country.
Well, yeah, and let me give you a classic example from here where I live.
Yeah.
You know what ginseng is?
Yes.
There's a huge market for it. It has certain properties, and it's an amazing little plant. And it's a root that you have to hunt for and has to be very carefully maintained because it resists domestication.
Mm.
It happens to grow all over central Appalachia. And we have laws. We have laws that say that you cannot go and hunt ginseng out of season. We have a specified season legally designated for when folks can go up on the hillsides and the mountainsides and the hollers and look for ginseng. And the people who are good at it, you know, you gather it by the pound and it makes a pretty penny. But if you do that out of season, your ass can be busted back to the Stone Age. On the other hand, if you're Massey Energy, you can blow up every piece of ginseng on the mountain and call it progress and say that we're meeting America's energy needs. You can destroy literally tons of ginseng that will never, ever grow back. And you'll be called a model citizen.
You know, Bob, I just saw a story that clicked with me, and I think it's going to click with you. A 7-year-old with a lemonade stand got shut down because she didn't have a business permit. Now, I have to laugh at that because it's a damn 7-year-old.
Yeah, right. And, you know,
got her a break.
Yeah, thank God Walmart has their business certificate, because if they didn't, we'd go shut them down, too.
But meanwhile, people, see, I want to put this in perspective for people. But meanwhile, Goldman Sachs scratch digital derivative lotto tickets. No, nobody shuts them down.
No, because they had their business license.
Wait a minute. What's that?
They had their business license.
Oh, yeah, they had their business license.
Yeah. But, yeah, it is ridiculous. You know, the same thing around here. Hunt deer out of season, they will bust you. There's a penalty that says they can take away your hunting license for life if you screw up bad enough hunting out of season. On the other hand, however, if you blow up the whole mountain and make it impossible and kill lots of deer, not so much.
Also, I wanted to say RIP to one of the greatest directors of the 80s,
yes,
John Hughes. I think... Before you close out the show, you should play "Don't You Forget About Me" or something on Breakfast Club or something.
That would be appropriate.
Just to memorialize the guy. I mean, you know what's crazy about it? Here's the thing that's really, really. I was always wondering what happened to him, and I looked up on IMDb. His last movie he directed was Curly Sue, but I had no idea the guy wrote some of the worst rental movies. And I guess that's what happens to you when you just get frustrated with the system and you just realize you can't direct the films that you want to direct. Bob, did you know he wrote all the Beethoven series with that stupid dog?
No.
He wrote that. I got a story to tell you about that. I went to go see Robin Williams, true story. I mentioned this before on the air, but I'm going to keep mentioning it because it's so hilarious. I went to go to see the Robin Williams film, the remake of Flubber. And I knew something was up, because in the beginning, I'm not kidding you people, in the beginning, to keep the people in the theater, this will give you the lens of the surreal here, the people in the theater were served Jell-O squares shaped like the Flubber. They said,
oh God,
enjoy your flubber. And then the manager, you want to talk about somebody who has no business sense, then the manager comes out before the film goes, he's talking like this, his gum in his mouth, he's like, people, I want you. It's like a damn scene out of like a Mike Judge film. It's like, people, I want you to know, whatever you heard about the reviews, not true. Good movie, enjoy. And then the lights go down, and there you are watching Flubber, and you realize that I turned to my mom and I said, this is not going to be a good film.
Oh, and I remember taking the kids to see that one, and it wasn't. It was a really not good film. We didn't get the Jell-O, though. I feel cheated now, all these years later, and I feel cheated.
I wanted to. I know you have a loyalty to Eugene Finnerman, but to me, I still think the one competing, the one competitor for the best satirist on the internet to me is Jesus General, and he's come up.
Oh, he's good. He's good.
He's come up with Bob. He's come up with a humdoozy for Barack Obama and the birth certificate. Barack Obama is a secret alien from the Slizzard star system. Dear Dr. Tates, until last yesterday afternoon, I was convinced that you had discovered Obama's original Kenyan birth certificate. Heck, I bought it completely. I had to. I had to believe it. That's what having faith is all about. It did not matter that it was issued by the Republic of Kenya a year before that nation existed. That's easily explained by time travel. Hugo Chavez developed it 15 years ago and used it.
George Norrie, Art Bell, where are you?
Yeah, used it to clean up the Clintons' murders of Vince Foster, Liberace, and 763 people in Mena, Arkansas. Apparently, he also conspired with Obama to change African history as well. Anyway, like I said, I believe your document to be absolutely genuine up until the moment, yesterday afternoon, when a one-armed man showed me an even more genuine birth certificate in a Nashville area Waffle House. I was skeptical at first. It didn't look like any government document I'd ever seen. But then the man explained that it was an alien. Lou Dobbs says gives us the leprosy, not the other ones, the ones from space. He said that Obama's mother was actually a reptilian alien from the Slizzard star system. Then he went on to translate the document, and it had all made sense. You see, it was signed by George Soros. That's what convinced me. It's just the kind of thing Soros would do.
Oh, it is.
That. I have to believe that. It's a matter of faith. Here's a photo of the document. Oh, and this is the kicker. This is what makes Jesus General the top tier. He takes a picture of an Infinity car hubcap, and then he has arrows pointing to what each line represents. Father Barack Hussein Obama, one of the holes, hatchling, Barack Hussein
Obama. Hatchling.
And then he has another one that says FEMA camp exemption. And then the bottom hole, he says, signed George Soros, Registrar of Mixed Alien Statistics. And then there's another hole that says Mother and Sliz Obama. And then the seal, the Infinity Seal, the great seal of the Slizzardian socio-fascist empire. And then he closes it out, so genius. He says, I'd like to get this to you. Where can I send it? Heterosexually yours, in a chaste biblical and non-medicated way, General Jesus Christian Patriot. P.S. I saw your appearance on MSNBC. You were spectacular. You should do more interviews, and you should get your supporter, Representative Michelle Bachmann, to join you.
Well, and Lottie pointed this out to me in the chat room last night, David.
Yeah.
Just in case there aren't enough official Kenyan Republic of Kenya birth certificates going around, you can have your own. Go to Kenyan, K-E-N-Y-A-N, Kenyan Birth Certificate Generator. I know, it's a hell of a URL. KenyanBirthCertificateGenerator.com. And there you can have your very own Kenyan birth certificate. I have seen Lottie's, and I am absolutely convinced that it is real.
One last thing before I go. When you say sauna, is Merriam-Webster wrong? Because I just looked it up on a dictionary, and they say sauna.
No. I trust someone who's hung out with Finns. Sauna.
Well.
It sounds more Scandinavian. Sauna. Yeah, you betcha. Although that may be a little too Swedish, and I'm sure I will hear from our buddy Scott or perhaps Michael from Norway. Hey, lay off. Yeah, but no, I trust Janny.
Sorry, Finnish people. I'm going to keep saying sauna because it sounds cooler. I'm an American. I can do that.
God.
Oh, one last thing before I go. Bob, I really have to get you to start watching. Oh, my God. People, and this is a great quote before I go. You really have to start watching. I put it up there with anything. Bob, anything. Idiocracy? It's up there with Idiocracy.
No.
Yes. It's
Heresy.
Trailer Park Boys, the show from Canada, Bob. There's a part. I have to explain the characters real briefly. It's in a trailer park. Usually what it revolves around is these guys. It's in a trailer park in Canada. What it revolves around is these guys usually do dumb schemes to sell weed, and they end up in jail at the end of the season. There's this one guy. This is just the genius of the writing of the show. There's this one guy who's named Mr. Leahy, and he has a relationship with this guy who wears no shirt and tight white pants named Randy. And he has a huge gut, and all he does is eat cheeseburgers. And anyways, there's this one period where they're really starting to talk about their life in detail. And he tells Mr. Leahy in his Canadian accent, like, Mr. Leahy, you gotta stop drinking. And he goes, because you're drunk off your ass right now. And the guy, this guy who plays Mr. Leahy, easily one of the top drunks in all of film, all of TV.
No, better than Foster Brooks.
He is on the level of Foster Brooks. Oh, my God, he is on the level of Foster Brooks. I'll have to talk more about Trailer Park Boys. And, Bob, you have to watch. You have to promise me. You have to do your sacred oath. You have to watch, like, one episode a day, 25 minutes. And I guarantee you it'll make your day better. Anyways, this is the...
Well, the stop. Where do I get it?
Oh, I'll send you links. I'll send you links.
Okay.
It's going in the vault. But anyways, he's drinking like crazy. And it's such a freaking classic line. He goes, why? And they're filled with it. And he goes, you need to stop drinking right now. And he pauses. He does this dead take, and he looks at him. He goes, Randy. He goes, Randy, I'm not drunk. Boy, I am the liquor. And Bob, if that doesn't hook you, if that doesn't, Sandra, I'm telling you, that show, easily, one of the top 10 of this century, easily. Probably for the past century.
Trailer
Park Boys. Oh my God, man, so genius!
All right, you've done it. I'm there.
And I'm telling you, I bet you Mike Judge watched it. I know Mike Judge watched it.
So is it done or is it ongoing or?
Oh, it's pretty much it's finished. There's 7 seasons. It was really successful outside of the United States and around the world. And I just caught wind and started watching the episodes because I'd heard it so many times. But, oh, my God, Bob, there's so many quotables. And one other thing about the greatness of Mr. Leahy, there's this part in it where this shows you the genius of how he's able to stay in character. And they have these kids in the park called bottle kids. And these bottle kids, all they do is just throw bottles at people. Well, there's one scene in the movie, there's one scene in the show where they literally throw a bottle at Mr. Leahy's head. And in the commentary section in the DVD, this is the craziest shit I've ever heard. They said that wasn't an intention, that was unintentional. But the guy was such an amazing actor. He pretended to be drunk, and at the same time, he didn't even flinch when the bottle hit him in the damn head.
That's a man who's dedicated to his craft.
I know. So everybody listening, Trailer Park Boys, seasons 1 through 6. I haven't watched 7, but oh my God, on the level of Idiocracy, I will put that on my firstborn and my kindred spirits, my muses, my quantum God, whatever you want to do, easily.
Wow.
And you know when I co-sign, Bob, I know.
You don't just do this over anything.
No, I don't do just that over anything. There's just, and I didn't tell you, I mean, this, all the characters, Bob, when you watch it and you go over it, you will start comparing all of these characters in Trailer Park Boys to a lot of people in pop culture and politics. I can't tell you, that's how Sam Brooks.
Am I going to wind up playing this backward to hear the secret messages?
When you watch it, Bob, when you see the first episode, you're going to say, Jesus, David was right. He was right, goddammit. He was right.
Okay, this is
immediately, right away.
Then this will be my night's relaxation.
Oh, immediately. I mean, the way it's filmed. Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you the way it's filmed. It's filmed like in a mock documentary fashion. So they're talking to the people in the trailer park, and they're actually there's like this level of self-importance that they feel for themselves, and no matter what they do, they always create a disaster. But at the same time, they bring some levity to it in that disaster that they make, and they have a great explanation for it. I mean, there's so many quotes from all the characters, and I can't get into that. But I look forward to sharing more conversations with you about Trailer Park Boys and with anyone who else wants to have it. I hope I've enlightened you. I told Spike about it. I still have to send him a link so he can watch some episodes.
Oh, because, yeah, Spike will get after it.
Oh, and if you guys really want to watch episodes right now after Bob's show, and you're like, damn, David, why'd you do this to me? Now I got to watch it. And you don't want to download anything? Well, I got you on that one. Go to Justin TV and type in, go to Google, type in Justin TV, Trailer Park Boys. A streaming channel will come up 24/7 where the fans just stream episodes. So you can just zone out.
So is that Justin TV?
Justin, Justin TV. Put Trailer Park Boys. And like the first one should come up is the channel's called Trailer Park Boy. Or you'll see something Trailer Park related. And you just click on that and instantly a screen will come up. You can put it full screen, and you can watch whatever episode's on there. It doesn't matter because they're all damn funny.
Wow. Cool.
All right, Bob. I'll talk to you later, and I look forward to having these discussions.
All right. We will. Take care, David.
Later.
Bye now.
Bye.
David has turned me on to so much cool stuff. It's just it's amazing. And he really doesn't. He doesn't wax rhapsodic about just everything. Pistol Shrimp, Trailer Park Boys. You got to. There's something special about both of them. We are close to the end of the program for the evening, and I'm trying to sort out what to do here. For you, John Hughes, 59 years old, died of a heart attack today while walking in Manhattan. That's not what that is. I'm getting really, really frustrated. There it is. There's a phrase that gets used on this show and gets used around the house some comes, of course, from that film. The phrase being Neo Maxi Zoom Dweeby, John Hughes. Whenever something seems particularly deserving of whenever the silence is deafening. Like, you know, for instance, asking some Repiglican the family values type. Why he got caught, you know, not defending his own marriage, and the silence is deafening. Of course, you get Bueller, John Hughes, and he will be missed. But he has a legacy of work that will live on in his stead. And with just a few minutes left, I promised you something last night that I didn't deliver on, and I've been wanting to deliver on it this evening to make sure. With all that we have talked about regarding birthers and whatnot, this video was provided to me by our pal Dennis in Kentucky. And this just explains it all. It's all so clear to me now. Or maybe not. I'm not sure if this is a YouTube video or an acid trip. You can figure it out. You tell me.
Hi, YouTube. Today is Tuesday, August 4th, 2009. This is the fourth video in my series, Foundations of American Government. And this is the most important video of all of them. This is right here. This is the proof that Barack Hussein Mohammed Obama is not a natural born citizen.
You got that? Barack Hussein Mohammed Obama? Yeah. And you hear that accent? I haven't quite figured out which part of the South she's from, but I am ghastly afraid that she is from North Alabama. Possibly Mississippi. She won't tell.
This is the big finale. Don't miss it. Please, come on. Stay with me. Hang with me. Hang with me. Okay, I'm going to go through the definitions right quick. I'm going to show you the proof, and I'm going to read the conclusions here.
You know, you never see anything but her face, and that leads me to think that she's actually operating her... operating her laptop with the little the webcam in it with her prehensile toes, but never mind.
That Jetta Pauley has compiled for me. This is really important. Natural law, science and foundation of law that forms stare decisis, which are stare decisis science of law. That's
stare decisis if you want to get technical about it, but never mind.
Some Latin term, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it's just some Latin term, not really sure. But I'm going to tell you that. I'm going to tell you how it is that Barack Hussein Mohammed Obama ain't really who he ain't really the president.
Exactly what that is. Basis of all law in history. Laws of nature. Laws that are discovered or derived from forces of nature and naturally shape and govern societies and human behavior. Subject matter of science and or law. Often operating simultaneously.
By the way, her eyeliner is impeccable.
And interchangeably. Natural law of inherited loyalties. This was from my previous video. Please, this plays a big important part in the conclusions and proof that Obama is not eligible. Males are only born with one fixed loyalty that is fixed by nature and logic to be only to his father's tribe and people.
Oh, notice the emphasis, tribe.
People. Females are naturally born with the possibility of split loyalties because families can...
You know, I'm not gonna. Yet the females are born with the possibility of split loyalties. But Jesus criminy. Are you understanding it all now? Is it all getting clearer and clearer for you? Well, you know, listen a little harder. Gosh, it would be nice to have video for this program at times like this, because I could play you that concentric swirling circle thing. Listen hardly.
And come from outside of the tribe, so females can be loyal to husbands' tribes and home family tribe. Males are only naturally born with loyalty to only one tribe, dad's tribe.
Okay. Dad's tribe, that's right. Who was your daddy's tribe, honey?
Okay, let's say that again. Males are only naturally born with loyalty to only one tribe, dad's tribe. That would be Obama Sr. Define natural-born citizen, dad. Natural-born citizenship and natural rights inherited from American citizen dad by the laws of nature and natural law, soil is irrelevant, just because he is your natural birthright dad and he is an American citizen.
Somewhere in here, there's got to be somebody trading a birthright for a pot of thin soup or something. Jiminy.
That would be natural-born citizen dad. Define natural-born citizen mom. Natural-born citizenship and natural rights inherited from...
Jesus, define sane.
American citizen mom by the laws of nature and natural law, soil irrelevant, just because
soil
she
irrelevant.
Is your natural birthright mom and she is an American citizen. Define natural born citizen parents. Okay, natural born citizenship inherited from both mom and dad who are Americans by the laws of nature, soil irrelevant, just
soil
because
irrelevant.
They are your natural parents and they are American citizens.
That's right. You can be born without soil. You can be a hydroponic person. Do you understand? This is all just making perfect sense to me.
Define natural-born citizen soil. To be privilege of soil citizen granted to foreign immigrant kids. I think this is our anchor, babies.
Oh, she didn't! But she did. I think this is our anchor, babies.
Foreign parent and or parents born on soil jurisdiction of U.S. Soil jurisdiction of government only thing relevant. Oh, okay. I get it. I see why. That would be-
Honey, rehearse it a couple of times before you use them prehensile toes to turn the camera on, for God's sakes.
That would be anchor babies born to illegal aliens. Okay. Define natural born citizen. Anyone of natural born citizen dads, natural born citizen mom, natural born citizen parents, natural born citizen, even the soil, even the...
You know, she calls it her series, and yet it's clear she's reading something that some that not even approaching marginally sane person has, you know, used the inner tubes to email her. But this is where they are. These are the people who go and clap, remember, clap and laugh when Repiglick and right-wing members of the House talk about lynch mobs. This is that. I can't take any more. I don't know about you, but I cannot take any more of that. This in from, let's see. Let's go to the phones. Got a couple of minutes left. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, welcome on.
Hey, it's Lee, sorry.
Yeah, what's up, Lee?
Thanks for the dose of crazy. I wasn't getting enough in Texas today.
Yeah.
Yeah, and...
Well, you know, I never thought of that. That could be a Texas accent.
Yeah, we got them.
Does she sound a little bit Texas?
Sounds like she's got big hair.
No, I think it was probably big. I think it was probably big a couple of decades back, but now it's just a nice jet black sort of dye job, and she's got, my God, it looks like she's used roof tar on her eyes.
I'm amazed, and I know it's not prayer meeting night, but I'm amazed, and I did send you that little, never mind, that link to that Tim Curry thing, so you can at least try and find that trailer. Maybe that's the Christian deal, but, you know, and how the new religions are built on the bones of the old one. It's funny how many women will keep disparaging themselves and be the good little wife or whatever. And I hate to use a blanket statement by any means, but didn't, if I remember right, Christianity starts with, my voice going up like Peter Brady. Christianity starts with the whole, you know, fall of woman and the serpent, and yet wasn't the serpent a symbol of wisdom and all these other religions? So you disparage the old goddess religion and the woman right off the bat.
Oh, right, because that's a very good point, because among other things, the serpent in the most ancient forms of the Greek religion there was a house snake, and snakes were worshipped in little crevicey places and stuff. It appears all through Greek mythology. You're very, very, you're spot on, Lee. Unfortunately, I've also got to ring off. So, last word.
Oh yeah, just thanks for that. So, and David is right. You really do need to put some time into the Trailer Park Boys. But I will let you guys go. I hope that link is in the chat room or something to that woman. I need to send some more.
I think if I'm not mistaken, Cossack has put it up. If that's the link that I think it is.
I thought he was putting up Doors videos, but anyway, all right, I'll talk to you guys later. Have a great Thursday.
All right, thanks, Lee. Bye now.
See you, sir.
Yeah, it's a little less than two, well, it's right at 2 minutes before the hour, and it is time to ring off. Another encouragement, they are going fast. You want your copy of For the Love of Appalachia, the beautiful handmade print, limited in number, by our dear friend from the chat room, Blythe Rain, otherwise known as Diane. And you can get it easy. Just click the button at headonradionetwork.com. It'll take you to the shopping cart, and there are a myriad ways by which you can purchase yours. And it will go a long way toward helping out the Horn in a very, very important and financially distressed time. So please do. Please do. You'll be glad you did. It's gorgeous. You'll smile every time you see it. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, and to everyone, Lottie, Jean, Susan, Texas Betsy, Sue. Oh, thank you. Thank you to everyone who, in one way or another, from financial contributions to skull sweat and unending work, makes sure that this program and the other programs on the Horn continue to happen. Thank you. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are the hardest working, bravest people I know, for an abundance of reasons, many of which you have heard on this program. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome along this Thursday afternoon, late Thursday afternoon, maybe it's early Thursday afternoon, mid-Thursday afternoon, wherever you are. Whatever it is, I hope it's a good one. Thanks for joining in this afternoon, this evening. Welcome to what I hope will be 3 hours of scintillating conversation. Thank you for your indulgence last night, as it was necessary for me to knock off 30 minutes early. The Netroots Nation conference call for the Democracy for America scholars. Yeah, I'm a scholar. Was quite good. And there's a heck of a lineup coming at you from Pittsburgh. I invited all of my fellow scholars there on the conference call last night to, by all means, drop by the horn table and let their readers know that they can be heard and that the whole event can be heard, various and sundry panels, via the streaming solutions of the horn. This is a little peek into what can be a very exciting future. Turns out C-SPAN will be there and covering several of the events. I still haven't had an update on whether Bill O'Reilly's stalking producer is going to be there, but I will have a plate of falafel and a sign, free falafel for Bill O'Reilly employees. I mean, you can't let an opportunity like that pass you by. Right? Sure. There's going to be approaching 2,000 or more people at this event. That's pretty good. And that's a lot of good liberal ideas and a lot of passionate, progressive liberal dedication. I imagine there's going to be some noise made about things like health care while we're there. I know we'll be making some noise about mountaintop removal. This should be exciting across the board. And I think it's cool beyond comprehension that y'all are going to be there. We will, of course, invite folks to the chat room where you can discuss among yourselves and maybe get some questions in, depending on the panel that you're listening to at the time. The potential for this simply astonishes me. And that all begins next Thursday. I have to leave here Tuesday. I'll try to do a show Tuesday night. Quite possibly Guy James and I will do a show together Wednesday night. Wouldn't that be neat? And then on Thursday, the balloon goes up. The whistle blows, the eagle flies, whatever you like. And the coverage begins. It is, of course, a historic day in this country. Sonia Sotomayor has been confirmed in a 68-31 vote in the United States Senate. 9 Republicans did cross the line to vote for her. The lone senator not present for the vote was Ted Kennedy, unable to attend. Now, Justice Sotomayor will be sworn in on Saturday by that weirdo right-wing freak John Roberts, the R in rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. Thirty-one weird, twisted, un-American, right-wing, old Confederate freaks. Susan Collins and Olympia Snow of Maine, New Hampshire's Judd Gregg, Indiana's Richard Lugar, Missouri's Kit Bond, Florida's Mel Martinez, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and Lamar Alexander of Tennessee all voted in her favor. But not Senator Inhofe. Oh, hell no. Not Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Tud. Nope, he wasn't getting it. She's just a little too female, a little too, not white. Senator Voinovich of Ohio is correct. The Repig-Licking Party is little more at this point than a manifestation of the old Confederacy. And I hope it continues to narrow until it finally dies. Of course, then we'll have enough of a battle on our hands dealing with so-called blue dog Democrats. Congratulations to Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And let me say from the outset that I know that she's going to render decisions that I'm going to sit here and think are absolutely crazy. Because, remember, if you're in the judiciary, I don't care if they call you a liberal or an activist, you are involved in the single most conservative undertaking in this country. Because remember, the law, what does it do? 3 M's, remember? It manages the morons. It punishes the mean ones. And above all, it protects the money. So just bear that in mind. But congratulations. Congratulations are in order and more than due for Sonia Sotomayor. I mentioned that Senator Ted Kennedy was unable to attend the vote. He is, of course, still dealing with his illness. And if you ever wondered, as we always do, if you ever wondered just how it is that, how low a Repig-Licking can go, if you ever wondered that, of course, there are always Repig-Lickings willing to show you how low they can go, and when you think they've gone as low as they can go, they'll dig a little deeper, and they'll get a little further into the filth. I offer as tonight's Exhibit 1 of that proposition, Senator Chuck Grassley. Charles Grassley. Nasally, weaselly little man from Iowa. He is the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee. He is the man who is doing everything.